desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whatever it may be, wherever you are in the world. And that's just about everywhere. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. My God, it feels good to be back. It really feels good. I've got so much to tell you about this hour. You're gonna get a story you just won't believe. What in God's name happened to WJKM in Hartsville, Tennessee? Some of you on the net may know something about this story. Those of you who don't, hang in there. We've got the man who was right in the middle of what happened at that radio station. Something really weird. As you know, we've had here, where I broadcast, we've had some sort of anomaly that actually took out our satellite, took out land, microwave, internet for me, everything all at once. So we've experienced just a little bit of what they experienced at this radio station. WJKM in Hartsville, Tennessee. We'll tell you all about it in a moment. First, a couple of items. The website has been down. I guess Premier Radio physically moved the website, and the net has to catch up. Now, most of you tonight at this hour should have the website back. It's been gone for a couple of days, and people have been going ballistic saying, what in God's name is going on? First Art's gone, then the website is gone. Well, the website's back, and so's Art, at least to some degree. I will explain all of that in a moment. Number one, if your local IP internet provider has not yet managed to do it, let me tell you a way to get to the website. You just put in http://, and then the following numbers, 216.34.214.206 in your browser, and that'll bring it up until the name makes it to your internet provider. Again, that's 216.34.214.206. So the website, as far as we know, for most of you, is going to be back, and if you don't get it, you might try that direct route, and you'll get there. A second item, as you know or may have heard, my back has been oot, really oot. And I don't know if anybody ever does this, but I am going to share with you a little bit of my MRI results that I received today. And by the way, there are pictures of my... Oh, boy, do I have a story to tell you about the MRI. Oh, boy, do I have a story to tell you. Matter of fact, there are photographs on my website right now at artbell.com of the MRI machine I went into. And that sucker is narrow. Oh, boy, talk about claustrophobic. Your nose is about... you know, about 5 inches away from the top of the tube. And they put you in this little tiny tube. And I've got to explain to you what happened during the MRI, because as you might well be aware, I was on the alert for any strange things that might occur. And a couple did. So I'll tell you about them. But reading from the report of the radiologist, in part, just in part, maybe some of you know more about this than I do. At least I did not blow it. The good news is I do not have a herniated disc. The bad news is, let me read, right dorsolateral L3-L4 disc bulge abutting the right L4 nerve root in the lateral recess and causing a mild degree of right L3 foraminal narrowing. And then they go on. Broad-based disc bulge at L4-5. Causing moderate lateral spinal canal narrowing. This could affect the L5 nerve roots in the lateral recesses. Please correlate with symptomology. So, that's it. It's pretty long, but I just read you what I consider to be probably the relevant points. And then to add to all of that, how's this, folks? I'm about 4 or 5 days into this disaster with my back, and I've got a bridge in my mouth. You know, lower molar in the rear. And I had, of course, when they put in the bridge, I had a root canal. They do that first. Oh, they're fun. And check this out, folks. It looks as though one of the root canals failed. So I had, my face was like a basketball. Here I am. I can't walk because of my back. I can hardly sit or do anything else because of my back. It's hurting so badly. And I get a root canal that fails, and my face blows up. So I had a backache and a toothache at the same time. That is pain. So how long I'll be here tonight is somewhat problematic. I'm going to try to make it through because I really want to do this. I've been so damn bored, you can't believe how bored I've been. So there you have it. That's the MRI. That's the information on my back and my stinking tooth. So I'm taking penicillin for that, and then they will try to save that tooth. You know how that goes, right? Toothache and backache at the same time. It's been really a riot. Hey, ratings are starting to come in. Check it out, folks. We're up to an 8.1 share in New York City on WABC. And by the way, WABC just rocketed up. Congratulations, Phil. Congratulations, everybody at WABC. What a job. WABC is back, folks, big time. And I mean really back. So, there you have it. I wanted to tell you about the survey. Tomorrow we'll probably have Los Angeles, and I will report the numbers to you as they come in. I would like to welcome KFGO in Fargo, North Dakota, 790 on the dial, 5,000 big watts. And I'd like to say hi to Dick Voigt, who's the general manager, Ed Schultz, the ops director, Jack Sunday, the PD. That's KFGO in Fargo, North Dakota. Then KFYR in Bismarck, North Dakota. They're 550 on the dial there. 5,000 watts, that goes a long way on 550. And KMAN in Manhattan, Kansas, 1350 on the dial. That's KMAN, Manhattan, Kansas, 1350 on the dial. Welcome, all of you, as we rocket. And I mean, we are getting so close now to 500 affiliates. You can't believe it. All right, more in the next hour. Right now, well, coming up in a moment, actually. What in God's name happened to WJKM in Hartsfield, Tennessee? I'll tell you a little of what happened. I received the following email. Energy Pulse kills birds and radio station at about 10:45 a.m. today. This was now last week. Radio station WJKM in Hartsfield, Tennessee was knocked off the air by a very powerful, strange energy blast. Crystal clear blue sky, no clouds, no rain, no lightning. Please consider my credentials, Art. I'm the general manager of the station. I was listening when it left the air. To be brief, I'm the chief engineer for a group of Nashville radio stations. I have a first-class FCC license. I'm a ham, WBAPUM. I called the radio station. Couldn't get any answer because of the phone system. It was out. There was one line working in the building out of 10, the fax line, so I dialed it. My sales manager answered it as there was no fax machine. He said the power was out at the station and the newspapers, the Hartsfield Vedette next door. The power had been knocked out in an area of less than a quarter of a mile. One, all the radio station's lines were knocked out. Two, several power transformers were blown several blocks away from the studios. Smoke seen billowing out of one of them. All the phone lines, this is three, all the phone lines at the newspaper, the Hartsfield Vedette, the local farm co-op, and all other phones in this small radius knocked out. Four, radio station transmitter lost all MOSFETs and the output tuning network. All computers at WJKM lost their motherboards, network cards, and so forth. Six, ISDN knocked out. Seven, most of the equipment, Zephyr codes, and EAS all knocked out. Not a cloud in the sky. No lightning. And there's oh so much more. Coming up in a moment, the man who is represented by what I just read, Ted Randall. He'll tell us what in God's name happened at that radio station. Let's find out what in God's name happened to WJKM in Hartsfield, Tennessee. Here is the man who is the chief engineer and more for an entire group of Nashville radio stations, Ted Randall. Ted, what happened there?
Well, Art, you tell you, I don't know. I wish I had the answer to that, but it sure took us totally by surprise. We were so off guard, not expecting anything unusual that, some of this stuff could have slipped past us real quickly and we would have never known the difference.
Well, again, remember, well, I don't know. When you lose so much of the radio station, that's not going to slip by you.
Well, no, what I'm talking about is the other odd things. In other words, we could have been so absorbed in just replacing equipment. What kind of tipped me off is on my way in, our station secretary, Jennifer, told me, she says, well, you know, we found a dead bird in the back. And then she said there was two dead birds, and there was three dead birds. And
dead birds. Now, these are, and I've got pictures of these birds on my website, folks, at least a couple of photos. You really ought to take a look at them. These are small birds. These are not birds that would have gone across any power lines. They're not big enough to have gone across power lines, as you will see, obviously, when you look at the photos. These birds are fried. Fried. Is that an accurate description?
Melted, fried. The strangest thing was is that when I got to the station, I was looking for my sales manager, Steve, and I said, where is Steve? And they said he went to get some bird seed. And I was like, what?
Bird seed?
Yeah, what's going on here? Well, one of the birds, there were several of them that were still alive. I mean, this was scattered throughout all of City Park. Our radio station tower is located in the middle of like a five-acre plot of land in the middle of a park.
Right.
Only station I've ever seen in the middle of a park. But
yeah.
Nonetheless, there's probably, I'm guessing, and I could be way off, I'm going to say if our radio station plot's 5 acres, the entire plot's, the park is probably somewhere around maybe 50 acres somewhere, and I may be way off, but okay. It's big. It's a good-sized park.
Sure.
There's a track that goes around the park that people walk, you know, for exercise, and if you go all the way around, it's about a mile. So I don't know what that would contain, but in that mile radius, there were birds at one end and birds all the way at the other end. And what had happened is Jennifer had found one bird that was alive that had no wings. And on the WJKM website, it's a bird in the middle, and if you put your mouse on it, it'll say Steve's bird. But Steve had gone to get bird seed for this bird, and then he later took it home, and of course, then the bird later died. But there was a lot of birds that were still alive. They were on the ground.
Yeah, I'm looking at one that most of the wing is missing. There's some internal parts of the wing left, and that's kind of hanging out. That's all.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what do you think when something like that happens? I didn't know what to think. I mean, so I immediately went next door and talked to the people at the Vidette, you know, because there was no power there. And
that's the newspaper.
Right.
Right.
And Julie, I think Julie's the editor. She may not be, but I think she is. But I talked to Julie, and she told me basically what had happened. What she said to me was real disturbing, because she said there was a flash of light inside the building.
Inside the building.
Right. Now, I'll tell you, because after all of this began to unravel, and I'm trying to figure it out, because You're an amateur radio operator, and you've got a little background in electronics.
Sure.
Radio engineering type people tend to think analytically, and you try to unravel things, you know.
Absolutely.
But you're always looking for 1, 2, 3, 4, and some sort of chronological reason why something happens. And up until that point, none of this was making any sense at all, because the transformer that blew up was two blocks away, or there was two. Someone told me two transformers. One was smoking, and I don't know if there were two or one, and I was never able to really confirm that with a power company, but one did go off. I've got some statements from some of these people. Would you like me to play a few of them for you?
Absolutely.
I could start off with my sales manager, who took the bird home, and on the website, it's labeled Steve's Bird. In a way, it was kind of touching, it was tragic. And in another way, a little bit humorous. And I don't know how you get all that going at the same time, but basically that's what we have. But now this is what I got from Steve when I talked to Steve. I'm talking with Steve, the sales manager of WJKM. Steve, you were in the building on Friday when the lights went out, so to speak.
Correct.
Why don't you describe to me, if you can, what it was that you heard, saw, experienced, and what made it unusual?
Okay, well, the lights flickered a time or two, and then there was a kind of a low-level rumbling kind of noise. It sounded like a little kind of electric current, like a only lasted about 2 or 3 seconds, maybe at tops, two maybe. And that was about it, and then the lights were down.
Well, you talked to me before, you said something about you never heard anything like that, or you'd never, you know.
I never heard anything quite like it. It was rather unusual. It sounded like somebody, hit something, and there was a charge go off or something, kind of like a rumbling, like an electric current kind of thing.
Hmm. You didn't see any lights or anything?
Outside, the sun was shining. There were no lights inside.
Okay, well, I didn't know. Well, how is your bird doing?
Bird died.
The bird died.
Yeah, the bird died that night.
Your description of what this bird looked like was what now?
Yeah, the bird's wing on one side especially looked like it was kind of like a broiled chicken wing.
Mm-hmm.
And the wings were coming out right by the bloodline. In fact, it was bleeding a little bit, but it was kind of curled a little bit. And it looked as if even if the bird was able to recuperate some, there was some question the way that the feathers were coiled like that, if they would ever grow back.
I think the coiling was from heat.
It was like a quick fry. And he smelled of like fire, burn smell.
Well, what do you think about that?
Well, here's my question: if the birds were only standing or perched upon one leg of the line, and as small as they are, that would have been the only thing possible. I know of no way, do you, that they could have been fried this way. Plain out, no way. Can you imagine one?
No. I guess, you know.
In other words, you've got to get over both legs of the power line to get electrocuted.
The birds light on power lines constantly.
All the time. And of course, they can only light on one, unless you've got birds like we do out here. They could make it across two lines. But these little birds that died, that you found all over the place, they couldn't have possibly been over two legs.
Well, the thing that bothers me, let's look at it from a scientific standpoint. The bird's body is going to exhibit a certain amount of capacitance if it's on a line.
You mean a single leg?
Well, no, just the bird sitting on the line. In other words, the bird is on the line.
A little bit of capacity, yeah.
Right, okay. So let's suppose lightning hit the power line. Although we had no cloud in the sky.
Yeah, we could suppose that, but it was blue skies, right?
Right, but then I would think the bird would lose its legs.
Yeah, that would be a different story. And if lightning were to hit, then yes.
Birds don't sit on lines. These birds, I was told by someone who supposedly knows, don't light on lines anyways, but because of the type of bird they were. And I got an email from a fella basically that said, what kind of idiots are you? You don't know what kind of birds you have in your area.
Well, somebody will look at the picture we've got up, and they'll identify the bird, but it's a small bird.
Like, I'm a radio guy. I don't know anything about birds.
That's right.
I like birds, you know. But the thing is that these birds were their wings. I mean, this is the damage was done to wings.
Yeah.
And
Not the feet.
Right, because you can look at this one bird in the picture, and you can see, and I know the picture's not great.
Yeah, feet are intact. No, this picture is very good, the one I'm looking at that's on my website. And the feet are intact. The wings are just, they're gone.
Yeah. You know, and the thing that, I guess, was the conclusion I finally came to is I said, all right, power lines are suspended in the air. Phone lines are suspended in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Our tower is roughly 200 feet tall. It's a single omnidirectional tower. It's in the air a certain, you know, exposed to the above ground, an above ground situation.
You're a daytimer there, right?
Right.
So, and otherwise you'd have my show on.
Right, right. The birds were also in the air. I believe that.
Do you believe these birds fell out of the air?
I believe so, because they were very evenly scattered throughout the park. They weren't in just one area. I mean,
oh my.
So it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like we had a line. If they would have been along a power line, you know, and you could find birds down on the ground under the power line.
I'm with you all the way. So these birds came out of the air. I'll tell you what. Hold on. Stay right there. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. They lost it all. The transmitter, the output circuit of the transmitter, the MOSFETs, the computers, the motherboards, all of that. Gone. This radio station was hit by something really big. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Ted is chief engineer of a group of radio stations in Nashville. And something awful happened to WJKM and about a quarter mile radius of that radio station. Something incredible. Something that brought birds out of midair, fried their wings, put them on the ground, destroyed just about everything in the radio station. The transmitter itself lost all the MOSFETs, the output tuning network, ISDNs and so forth, all knocked out, phones all knocked out. Something really big happened there, and I think we better open our eyes, because we've had an EMP pulse out here, too. I'm not saying that's what it was. I'm saying somebody's doing something. Once again, back to Ted Randall in Hartsville, Tennessee. Ted, you're back on the air again. All of this damage to all of this electronic equipment, to your transmitter at the station, birds falling dead or wounded and dying out of the air. What do you imagine happened to you, Ted?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, a lot of folks have said EMP, and I had never even heard of the term.
I said it.
Prior to this.
So, When you and I talked, I said that.
Right, you did. That was the first thing you said, and I thought EMP, you know.
Well, it's because of what happened to me and here. And something is going on. Somebody is experimenting with something, and they're experimenting on us.
Can I play? Let me, if it's all right, can I play the lady from the newspaper?
Play the lady from the newspaper.
Now, you understand, you know, she's a non-technical individual sitting in this place minding her own business. And let her, this description, I mean, this may say something.
What is your name? I'm sorry.
Julie.
Julie?
Mm-hmm.
Did they finally get your telephone fixed over there?
Yes, they came today.
Could I ask you a favor?
Sure.
Could you tell me, in your own words again, what it was that happened?
Okay. Well, all right, Friday, I was just sitting there at the front desk doing my own thing, and then it's like I heard this. It sounded like a surge of electricity running through the building, and the lights went off for a second, and I'd looked up real quick when I heard that and saw like a flash of light on the front wall there, mm-hmm. in front of me. Okay, lights came back on, and then it did that again, and they stayed off. And again, I saw that flash of light, and I heard that sound. I don't know how else to describe it, except that it sounded like a surge of electricity coming through the building.
But now, when you saw the surge, or when you saw the light, the flash of light.
Yeah, I didn't know where it came from, but I figured, you know, something outside. It wasn't like when a car will drive by and you'll see the light move across the wall, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a big old block of light, like it came in through that window.
But it was broad daylight outside.
Right.
There were very few clouds in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
The sun was shining very brightly. So in order to get a flash of light in the building, whatever that was, had to be really bright.
Yeah.
But the power was out, though, when you saw the flash.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, this is weird.
Yeah.
Now,
it happened very quickly. I mean, it totally took me off guard because I'd never seen it do anything like that.
Ted, you write in what you sent me, and I didn't read this part before. You write, I look over the local radio station and found the TVA, that's Tennessee Valley Authority, getting real upset if any of this was mentioned over the air. You want to elaborate on that? Why would they get upset?
Well, this TVA thing is kind of it's a long-run thing with Hartsville. What happened years ago, they began construction on a nuclear power plant there.
Right.
And for some reason, the TVA decided to halt construction. And I've not really ever heard an explanation as to what that was all about, but they stopped. And when they did, they devastated the community as far as its economics were concerned, because you can just imagine the amount of influx of people and business and increase in everything
mm-hmm.
in the construction of a nuclear power plant.
Of course.
And when I took over as the general manager of the radio station, I was doing a little morning talk thing, and I was getting phone calls, and I would get people would call up, and they would say weird things. Like, the start was it was an elderly fellow that called me up, and he's very rural, sounded like a farmer up in years, and he started this conversation out with something like, well, they're just up to no good out there. And I said, what are you talking about?
Right.
He said, well, I've got some beagles. He said, I love beagles. He said, I've always kept beagles. And he said, I had some beagles. And he said, they'll run off on you sometimes. They get to chasing after something. And I, of course, I don't know that much about beagles. But he said his got away one day. A friend of his had called him and told him that he had seen the dogs, or one or two of the dogs, out by the nuclear plant cooling tower.
Mm-hmm.
And so he decided to go investigate. So he went out, and he said he got out there in his truck and hopped over the fence because he said he could hear the dogs out in the thicket. Within a few minutes, there was a helicopter overhead, and he told me 30 people on the ground, ushering him off the property. And basically, from the way he talked, they were not real nice. He even told me he had to take a nitro tablet when he got back in his truck. He was so upset by the thing. And he just basically had called me to tell me the story because we were joking, because we had had other people calling up and saying things like they would hear a strange humming sound at night, and it would be followed by, or during this time, there would be unmarked black helicopters that would be going to and from the site, C-130 transport planes going to and from the nuclear site.
Really?
Really? And, at first, I mean, we didn't know what to think. I mean, what do you think? I mean, you hear all these stories. I mean, you know, and I'm sitting back trying to piece it all together. So one afternoon, my son David and Matt, who are with me right here now, we took a ride out there. We just wanted to see what it would look like. I took a camera with me because there's a bunch of old Army barracks-looking buildings, and they have an incubator going supposedly with some businesses. And there are some businesses located out there
mm-hmm.
that are on that property or adjacent to the property. And on the way out, there's a lot of hills. It's a very picturesque area. It would remind you of some pictures you might see of the countryside in Germany. I mean, it's really beautiful out through there. And all of a sudden, here's the nose of a C-130 pop up over the top of a hill with its nose up in the air. And I turned to David. I said, that thing just took off from someplace. I said, either that or they were really low to the ground. Well, Fort Campbell, Kentucky is not too far away from there. And we've been told that Fort Campbell will fly airplanes and helicopters to do maneuvers, you know, and turn around and come back. But there was just something really odd about this. When I saw it, it just looked to me as if it had just taken off. It had all the characteristics of an airplane taking off, you know.
Sure.
And
climbing in power.
Right. And I mentioned that. I mentioned it to the lady that's ahead of our Chamber of Commerce, and she said, well, as far as I know, she says, there's no airstrip out there. So we drove all over looking. We couldn't see a thing that resembled an airstrip. We'd heard rumors that there was one, but we never, you know. So when we put this up on the website, I've had several gentlemen that my son Matt had found some satellite photos of the place.
Mm-hmm.
And we put the satellite photos up, and I've got an email back with arrows on it showing a 7,000-foot, what they're considering or saying is a runway.
That would do it.
And they're saying there are several people. I mean, not just one. I mean, dozens of people sending email have said that.
There's a runway. Let me ask you this, Ted. Are you, it sounds like you're suspicious that the TVA is doing something out there other than presiding over an unbuilt nuclear power plant. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing about it is there's no contact thing. When you call out there, you get an answering machine. No one will return your calls. I've had a couple of, and I would rather mention the gentleman's name, but a politician that's called me up several times to tell me, knock it off. Don't do that. You're going to get them upset. And they're going to donate a bunch of land to the county. And every time we would get on and just...
I dig it. This is a county level politician?
State level politician.
State level. State level, telling you to knock it off, huh?
Yeah, saying, well, you know, but in a nice way, saying, you know, you've upset them, they're not going to, you know, they may not donate the land and all that, you know, so I'd back off a bit. And then all of a sudden you wouldn't hear anything else about this land donation, you know. And then the latest thing is that the local power company and the TVA are going to combine to make an industrial power park to guarantee power to certain businesses. Well, that sounded real well until they introduced this other element of surprise, and that is they're going to take 3 years to do an environmental study. And then I just come uncorked on the air one morning, and I said, look, you build a nuclear power plant. You authorize a piece of ground to do nuclear fission on the banks of the Cumberland River where Nashville, Tennessee gets its water supply. Okay? And you're saying that it's okay to build one of these things here. Now, they want to do a little industrial power park. What more studying do they have to do to legitimize, you know, I mean, what else is there left?
I don't know unless there is something else happening.
Gentleman that lives in the area that I got acquainted with, and he's a very, very highly skilled electronics person that his business is, believe it or not, surveillance. Had a piece of property on a hill, and he had a chance to view the nuclear facility, had radar set up there for weather and whatnot. And I got a little clip from him. If you'd like me to play it, if you have time, I will. But he describes quite a few things that, and it's very much the same of what we hear.
Well, I want to ask you something.
Sure.
It said here your transmitter, the commercial transmitter, lost all the MOSFETs and the output tuning network. Now, I don't know what the hell would take out the output tuning network. You worked on it. What did you find?
Luckily, we had solid-state modules that we could unplug the modules from the transmitter.
Plug in new ones. Right.
The output tuning network, which was the directional coupler, the wire in the directional coupler was just completely burnt in two.
Burnt in two. Your antenna, of course, would act as a collection point for any energy suddenly distributed and would feed it backwards through the tuning network into the transmitter. So that's one thing to consider, I suppose. You can consider the line voltage coming in going the other way, but this is the end of the transmitter chain, folks. So I would think it more likely, would you, Ted, that it came the other way?
I think it entered through the antenna system.
Yep, that was my guess, too.
And it was probably looking, I'm just going to guess and say, looking for the ground on the power, on the power side.
Sure. Again, not a cloud in the sky, huh?
No. Mm-hmm. And, just unusual. But would you like me to play this gentleman's observations from up on the hill in regards to what he's observed at the nuclear power plant?
Let her rip, yes.
I'm talking with, I guess what I'll choose to, you want to say Dave?
We can use Dave.
Okay. We don't go any further than Dave. All right, Dave, quickly. You got some property, or had some property.
Had some property, yeah.
How many acres of property were there?
It was about 10 acres.
And about how far were you located from the nuclear power site?
We're approximately about 2 miles from there.
Okay. Now, what was it you had happen? You discovered this by accident, but
we were in the process of moving from California to out here in Hartsville, Tennessee, right by the nuclear plant, and we were doing a lot of, you know, construction work on the house and the trailers and things of that nature, and I had a fluorescent bulb in my hand, and we were kind of just walking around, and it was at night. It was probably about 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and noticed that the fluorescent bulb lit up, and I says, what in the world is causing this thing to light up? You know, I didn't have any transmitters or anything going, which I'm into transmitting apparatuses and things, and this thing just lit up. I didn't understand what the heck was going on, and it did it two nights in a row. As far as the heliacs, helical coils go, we had an interesting look at the Hartsville nuclear plant down here within the last year, and there's thousands and thousands and thousands of turns of piping. It goes around in a helical, dimension. It's kind of very similar to a coil. Now, I was thinking that if lightning was to strike in close proximity to that tower, it could be enough voltage in the air to excite that coil and could cause all kinds of strange things.
What if that coil were excited at the bottom, though, much like a Tesla coil?
Well, how does lightning strike? It goes from the bottom up. I think it's negative on the bottom and positive on the top. Is that how it goes?
I don't know. But anyways, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, too, is you've monitored up on the hill where you're at. You've had a radar system set up
right
there.
Mm-hmm.
And you're monitoring basically for the purposes of weather.
Weather radar.
And in incoming aircraft. But in the process of this, you noticed that there was some other radar coming from where?
The nuclear plant.
What?
Now, are you sure this was radar coming from there?
No, I'm not sure. As a matter of fact, I don't really know what it is. I can tell you that it's interference. Radar is very ambiguous anyway. Just because you see something on the radar screen does not mean it's exactly where it says it is. But anyway, the area where the interference was coming from was just like a beam. Every time the sweep would come around, there would be this like beam of interference that would be towards the nuclear plant. And I plotted it out right down to the foot, just about, and it's within the nuclear plant tower, you know, the actual stack. So there is some interference coming over there. I've noted that probably about a half a dozen times already, you know, with interference coming from that area.
There's another radio tower that's right near the nuclear mm-hmm. cooling plant.
Yeah, it's a couple thousand feet from there. It looks like an AM broadcast tower for some reason.
That's what it looks like to me, but there's insulators that are all busted up inside the guy lines.
Which makes you think that it would radiate like a broadcast tower to, you know, the insulators would be used to break up the radiation mm-hmm. so that it doesn't react with the, the guy wires.
Well, has anyone ever explained what that's for or what they're using it for?
Somebody told me it was used for NOAA, the National Oceanic Aviation Administration, or, mm-hmm. Something having to do with weather. But the thing is during major storms like tornadoes and stuff, I've actually monitored on a spectrum analyzer different frequencies that have never seen or heard anything directed or coming from that tower. So if they're using it for NOAA, what is it?
What else have you noticed? Okay, you're in the area, and you're high up in the area. You're able to look and observe that nuclear plant area.
Well, I think the first thing that people ought to be noted that there are aviation lights on the top of that thing to prevent aircraft from striking it. So a lot of flickering lights and things like that probably come from the top of that thing for, you know, the FAA regulations that require them to still have that thing lit. I've noticed some pretty peculiar stuff that goes on over there. There's a lot of activity with trucks, cars, all hours of the night. Very clandestine, strange, covert operations going on over there, and there's no doubt about it. And everybody's pretty hush-hush about it. You know, they don't say anything about it. You kind of wonder what is really going on over there.
You know, that could be 162 megahertz NOAA transmission thing for, you know, the weather. Weather notification and violent weather notification and that sort of thing, Ted. I don't know, but it certainly wouldn't light up fluorescent lights just unconnected to anything. It wouldn't do that. In fact, I don't know what would, short of incredible amounts of RF. You know, that'll light a fluorescent light, as I'm sure you're aware. But you'd have to have an enormous amount to be doing that statically. Yeah. So you guys were hit with something big. Something big.
You're talking about the fluorescent lights lighting at a distance. I mean, I've held a fluorescent tube near the balanced line on like a ham transmitter.
Sure.
It takes 800 or 900 watts to get thing up to full intensity.
That's right.
I can't imagine something that could light it up at 25 or 30 feet, much less a mile.
You don't want to imagine that, because whatever's lighting that up is also irradiating you and everything else. And I can't imagine. I have no idea what happened to you, Ted, but it was big and mysterious, and I'm sure you guys are kind of on edge now, aren't you?
Very much on edge. This is not the first power surge that we've taken, and in talking to our local power company, they've been as much puzzled by surges like this, where we've lost motherboards and on a clear day. And the other thing that was odd was that someone sent me an email, and I can't find this thing, but it's a graph of some sort. And the measurements came from someplace in Alaska, I believe something to do with HAARP. But this thing shows a pulse on a graph on the 6th. It shows a pulse on the 7th and one on Monday, I believe.
So, in other words, you're a little suspicious of HAARP, too.
Well, you know, the thing of it is Franklin, Tennessee received a tremendous shock wave of some kind on Saturday. And then I guess they received another one on Monday. Those coincide with this.
Something is going on in Tennessee. Brother, we're out of time. Listen, thank you, Ted. I'll probably have you on again. Let's track this together, because I'm very interested in what happened to you.
All right.
All right. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you much.
Good night.
Good night.
I'm Art Bell. We'll be right back.
It is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It certainly is. Good morning, everybody. Coming up in a moment is Colm Kelleher. He's Deputy Administrator for NIDS, which is the National Institute for Discovery Science. It's no less than the largest private investigative agency of its type in the world, looking into matters paranormal and strange. And speaking of that, and in celebration of our 8.1 share in New York City 12 plus, we had a big sighting in New Jersey. One way to celebrate it, right? It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. According to one eyewitness, they were just hovering. And then they just disappeared one at a time. Each one started to fade until they were all gone. Some witnesses thought the phenomena may have been a sign of alien presence. Others called it a miracle, but no one knows just what it was. All they can do is attempt to describe it. I'm reading from a newspaper article from abcnews.com, where I've got a very good connection, entitled Strange Lights, New Jersey Mystified by UFO Sighting, and my guest will have some illumination himself on this subject in a moment. By all means, if you didn't hear it, go back and listen to the first hour of the program tonight. For whatever in heaven's name happened to WJKM Radio and the newspaper and about a quarter mile area in Tennessee that Ted Randall just finished describing. In the first hour, I've also given you a report on my back, actually read from my MRI. You can see a picture of my MRI on the website. And I'll try to update you on a lot of other things that are going on. But coming up in a moment, Colm Kelleher. And he'll tell you what's going on all over the place. Oh. When did I last see Colm Kelleher? Well, actually, I was watching television the other day, local NBC affiliate here in Las Vegas, and who should be there but Colm Kelleher sitting out by a fire, dragged up there by the TV station, I suspect, at Area 51, sort of warming his hands by the fire and waiting for lights in the sky. Was that you, Colm?
That was me, definitely.
How you doing?
Excellent. That was actually a lot of fun. We had a night up in Area 51 a couple of weeks ago, and on courtesy of Channel 3.
I knew it.
We didn't see anything, but we had a lot of fun up there.
Uh-huh. Well, that's half the battle anyway. You had a lot of fun. And I think you told them that Area 51, from your point of view, was the last place to go looking for UFOs. Is that roughly what you said?
That's pretty well what I said, yes.
See, I was lying flat on my back, but that's all I could do is watch TV. God, it was boring. But your piece was great, Colm, absolutely great. And, you know, at the same time, they showed some other lights above Las Vegas that looked suspiciously like the lights over Phoenix, you know, the famous Phoenix Lights thing.
Yeah.
What do you know about that particular incident?
Well, over the last 12 months, we've had a few calls, mostly late-night calls from people who have seen different formations of lights over the Luxor Hotel and from the Strip, people calling in on their cell phones. There are some parallels with the alleged lights in Phoenix, but we haven't been able to go further than just getting the descriptions from the people, because nobody has shot really good video footage.
Hmm. Would you compare the two sightings, though, favorably? Would you say it was the same sort of thing?
With the sightings in Phoenix?
Yeah.
Probably not, because the sightings in Phoenix were very, very spectacular. This is the March 13, 1997 sightings that we're talking about here, and we're estimating that hundreds of people actually saw a large triangular object beginning at about 8:50 p.m. on the 13th of March, 1997, beginning in Henderson, Nevada, and then moving down the valley over Phoenix and then ending up in Tucson. That's what we call a spectacular sighting. And you know, then there was the various video cameras that got probably from three different angles a whole bunch of lights down there over the South Mountain over Phoenix. Now we're not sure if they're the same phenomenon that happened, but we we're fairly sure that several eyewitnesses actually saw an object, a large triangular-shaped object.
That's right.
Down.
Well, it was awfully coincidental time-wise if it wasn't the same.
Yeah.
Colum, what the hell just happened in New Jersey?
Well, the media attention, especially today, has been really phenomenal. We've been getting telephone calls. Actually, yesterday we started getting emails, and then early this morning we started getting telephone calls from all over the country and from newspapers in New Jersey and radio stations on the West Coast, and they're all focused on this event that happened on Saturday night, early Sunday morning in a small area called Carteret. I hope I'm pronouncing it right, in the area of New Jersey. It's on the New Jersey Turnpike, and multiple eyewitnesses saw 12 to 15, or ranging between 12 and 15 orange lights. They were moving together in what appeared to be a V formation, but we've also heard diamond-shaped formations. And apparently they changed formation. They were fairly low in the sky. So these were bright orange structures. There was no noise, according to the eyewitnesses we've talked to so far. And according to other eyewitnesses, it was a single object. However, the people we've talked to so far have just been reporting the actual lights. And I know that the various newspapers, New Jersey newspapers, and ABC did a story on it yesterday. They've been talking about actual objects, large triangular-shaped objects.
In the article I have, it says, according to the Associated Press, nearby Newark Airport reported no unusual flight patterns.
That's right.
National Weather Service said they could find nothing in the weather to explain the lights.
Yeah, the only thing that we're missing from the weather data, and we're trying to collect it right now, is the wind speed and direction of the wind in that area, just in case that there is a trivial explanation to this. But we did have a message from the police chief in Carteret, New Jersey, who said that about seven of his officers scattered around had actually seen this these objects. And other reports we've seen, we're talking about 70 to 75 cars that were parked on New Jersey Turnpike looking at these objects.
Yeah, it says some drivers even pulled off the New Jersey Turnpike for a better look.
That's right. So whatever this was a fairly spectacular sighting. We actually tape recorded a very short conversation earlier this evening with one of the officers who saw this object. So, you know, I could go ahead and play that if that's okay.
Oh, by all means. As a matter of fact, earlier I was talking to Phil Boyce at WABC, and they had me on hold waiting for Phil. And while I was on hold, whoever was on the air on WABC was saying Art Bell will probably be talking about this tonight. So there you are. We are. And here's an eyewitness report. Go ahead, Colin.
Yeah, hang on.
Okay.
1:45 on the night of the incident, I was standing outside my patrol car. I noticed a diamond-shaped pattern in the sky of lights. And then, after a few moments, the diamond shape went into a straight line. The one in the front, the light in the front went a little bit farther, and the other one drifted overhead. They weren't going so fast. I would say I saw them for about 5 minutes, and they drifted off over the horizon. That's about it.
Did they drift off separately?
No, all together.
All together, they stayed in formation?
Yeah. It looked like flares. You could actually see little pieces falling off. Actually, it looked like to me like a balloon or something with a flare on the bottom, but I never seen it stay in a straight line.
They did pretty much stay together then?
Just about, yeah.
Okay.
All right, that was a police officer.
That was a police officer who had seen these. Now, he did mention that he thought they looked like flares, but he also said that they went straight over him and went over the horizon. So the chances are these were not the normal flares that are dropped from an airplane, because they usually drop, you know, vertically.
Well, in the piece that I referred to at the top of the hour, the Channel 3 piece, they talked about, even referencing the Phoenix Lights and what was seen in Las Vegas, the possibility that the military has some new kind of secret flare that somehow manages to hover in midair. I can't imagine a parachute that allows a light to hover, but that's what they alluded to. And then they went on to say, well, the military has never admitted they have anything like that. So, you know, that could be a red herring, but they did mention that.
Yeah, one of the things that we've been looking at, and this is just a hypothesis, but I don't know if you remember the famous Rockford lights in Illinois.
Oh, yes, sure.
Which are very, very similar to some of the descriptions that we've been getting. In other words, they usually manifest as 12 to 15 lights that appear to travel in formation. And they've been seen probably four times in the last year over Rockford, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we did a bit of background check, in fact, quite a lot of background checking, on the penultimate incident that was reported. And we found that a couple of the eyewitnesses mentioned that they actually saw burning garbage bags dropping from the same area in Rockford, Illinois, where these objects were seen.
Burning garbage bags?
Burning garbage bags. Now, we did some tracking on this, and apparently there is a well-known hobby called fire balloons, where you actually you manufacture an actual balloon using a transparent garbage bag with candles. And these things can fly at up to 2,000 feet. There are websites all over describing these. Now, we're not saying that the New Jersey sightings is way too early to start speculating,
sure,
because we still have a lot of background to do on the eyewitnesses. But the Rockford, Illinois, some of the Rockford, Illinois sightings are striking in that these objects have actually been seen dropping into, you know, parking lots. Around the same time as the lights have been seen.
All right.
But it's a possibility that we're going to look at. The other aspect is that we do know, we've seen from the written reports, that people have described large black triangular objects in New Jersey. So, you know, there's a discrepancy there between the hypothesis of the candles and the balloons.
Well, you know, people are, you referred to the amount of publicity this got. People are used to people in Nevada and California and New Mexico and Arizona seeing these things, but we're not so used to people in New Jersey seeing these things.
That's right.
So I guess that might account for it. If it happens in New Jersey, maybe it carries more weight, huh?
Yeah, that's possible. If it happens in Rockford, Illinois, the chances are, you know, it's probably associated with these fire balloons. But who knows? New Jersey, this is the first time that we've had a major report like this coming out of New Jersey. Now, we know there's been at least two newspaper articles, and I know there's a third one appearing tomorrow in the Star Ledger in New Jersey on this topic, as well as CNN, as well as ABC. So they really did pick it up, and it went on the Drudge website there earlier today,
mm-hmm,
which is pretty widely dispersed. We've been getting calls from radio stations on the West Coast, specifically on the West Coast, and a couple in Chicago asking about this New Jersey sighting. So there's a lot of interest in it to see exactly what happened.
Well, isn't this interesting? All of a sudden, so many things going on. By the way, I suggested to Ted Randall, with reference to this Tennessee incident, that he get hold of you also. He may be doing that.
Yeah, we'd like to take a look at any of these birds, especially if anybody has managed to preserve them.
Well,
or store them.
I think they probably have, although these guys were singed. I take it you've seen the photographs.
Yeah, I've seen the photographs.
Really bizarre stuff. The feet are okay and the wings are just about gone.
Yeah. Things like your standard explanations have been ruled out.
Well, almost surely. I mean, what could take a bird out of midair?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with any of the lightning or any of those.
No, this was clear blue sky.
Yeah,
clear blue sky.
Yeah, I'd actually love to have a look at one of those birds and see what we could see.
Yeah, the amount of electronics that were destroyed. astounding. Computer motherboard's all gone. The output tuning circuit of the transmitter at the commercial broadcast station fried. I mean, it just went on. All the phones out, all the electricity out. It was absolutely amazing what happened there. We live in a strange world, don't we?
Yes, we do.
And that's what you guys do at NIDS. You are the deputy chief administrator, is that?
Well, I run the day-to-day research. I run the day-to-day operations at NIDS. Report to Robert Bigelow. He's the executive. He's the director, he's the president, and he's the founder. So I report to him, and we've got three separate directions that we're going in. A lot of what we've been doing in the last year has been focused on the UFO hotline, which is where we get all the calls in.
Let's give that out, by the way, since we're in such a highly active period right now. What is the hotline number?
It's area code 702-798-1700. And we also have a website, www.nidsci.org. And we take calls in from all over the country, and we've logged and investigated probably close to 1,000 cases in the last 14 months, 15 months.
So 1,000 cases?
Close to 1,000, and we've got a lot more calls than that, but somewhere between 750 and 1,000 cases, yeah, we've actually gone after, beat the bushes for eyewitnesses, and then we've cataloged the cases, and we've put them onto a gigantic map of the United States to see if there's any patterns.
Is there?
So far, actually, the only pattern is that a lot of cases are coming from the East Coast rather than the West Coast. We've
That's
got the standard
really
strip down California.
Yeah.
Then we've got the hot spots in Utah, New Mexico, and Nevada, because that's where we actually spend a lot of time additionally. But then on the East Coast, there's a surprising amount of calls that we get. And we're not sure why that is. Because we would be better known on the West Coast than we are on the East Coast.
You would think so, wouldn't you? Has the amount of investigative work overwhelmed NIDS? I know the resources are many, but that's a lot of investigating.
It is a lot of investigating. The majority of that is by telephone, but we, in the small number of cases that we really deem that are worthy of investigation, we put people on a plane, we go out there, we videotape the locations, and we take the testimony, you know, by tape recorder, and we try to get to the bottom of it. And what we're looking for is a physical evidence. In other words, evidence where an object may have landed, where it may have left traces or tracks in either vegetation, soil, or foliage. That's what we're ultimately looking for. And we figure out of close to 1,000 cases, we have not had a single trace case.
Not a single, what do you mean not?
In other words, a UFO that has landed on the ground left something to analyze.
Oh.
Most of the physical analysis that has dominated NIDS in the last few years has been on animal mutilations.
All right, hold it right there. We'll break here at the bottom of the hour and be right back. Olam Kelleher from NIDS is my guest. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
With Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
The following from NASA. A massive dust storm, the largest in 25 years and still growing, has erupted on Mars. It's so big that amateur astronomers using modest telescopes, hello there, can see it from Earth. And the cloud has raised the temperature of the frigid Martian atmosphere by a stunning 30 degrees Celsius. This story includes movies of the ongoing storm and explains how Martian dust storms can grow so large. It's absolutely astounding. Back now to NIDS, Colm Kelleher, and I want to give out that number once again. It's the hotline number. You can use it, we'll find out in a moment. It's area code 702-798-1700. 702-798-1700. 1700. And you can make a report, and listen, if something has really happened, NIDS has the resources. They have high-level scientists and investigators, and if necessary, they'll put them on a plane, and they'll get them to your area, and they will investigate what's going on. That's the kind of organization this is. Bob Bigelow funds it. He's got the money. He can do it. And by God, he's doing it. He's one of the few people in the world that have opened up in the way, actually he may be one of the only private individuals who's opened his wallet the way he has and is doing this kind of serious investigation. By the way, NIDS has just been honored, in my opinion, a great honor, by being the only agency or private concern listed in official FAA manuals to receive the reports from pilots and that sort of thing. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, Art. Actually, that has just come into effect officially on the 12th of July, so it's only a few days ago. And it's taken probably a year and a half of behind-the-scenes negotiation going back and forth. It began actually in late 1999 with a communication from NIDS to high-level people in the FAA. And then there were meetings in Washington, several meetings in Washington, where the items were discussed. And it really helped that at one of those meetings, one of the FAA personnel was an air traffic controller in a former lifetime, so to speak, who had been promoted up through the ranks, and he was at one of those meetings. But he had actually seen several uncorrelated targets on his screen, so he knew what NIDS was talking about. So we didn't have to explain, you know, that UFOs were particularly real. He knew, so that was a really big shot in the arm for us. And then eventually, in January of this year, four separate manuals for the FAA were designated for change, and we are now the sole, NIDS is now the sole contact point in the United States for the FAA to report airline pilot sightings, air traffic control.
Boy, that's really something.
Yeah, it's really excellent because it means that we can get increased numbers of high-quality sightings. We've always got a decent percentage of high-quality sightings, and then we've got another percentage of lights in the sky, that kind of thing. But now that we're on board with the FAA, we feel that we can do some good analysis.
Well, back in Close Encounters of the Third Kind time, they didn't report one of those things. Do they now?
The FAA?
The pilots.
Well, the pilots are really looking for a safe haven in order to report these things. That's been one of the problems. Now, with this mechanism, the NIDS-FAA relationship, there is a safe haven because there's a guarantee of anonymity. There's a guarantee of confidentiality. So that the pilots will have a mechanism for transferring the reports without going through huge amounts of paperwork, filling out the forms, and I'm not sure how it will affect the psychological exams, because some airline companies deem it necessary to put pilots through psychological exams, and obviously military pilots have to go through psychology exams too if they report.
So in other words, there still might be a stigma attached with reporting one of those things.
Yes, but I think less than there has been, because I think the recognition by the FAA, the official recognition, it's in black and white in their manuals, will go a long way towards alleviating that discomfort that pilots had.
Mm-hmm.
So we think it's a positive step, and it's a case of gaining the momentum as time goes on. As more FAA managers see these new inclusions, the word will go around. We're already getting calls from FAA managers calling us to see, you know, exactly what we do and why we do this.
Really?
Yeah.
Just sort of speculatively interested in what you're doing.
That's right, and we've had multiple referrals from eyewitnesses who have called the FAA, and the FAA have passed the cases on to us. So the system is beginning to work, and we're pretty confident that the momentum will build.
Boy, are you guys going to be busy.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty exciting, because I think we have a small percentage of pilot sightings, but we'd really like to increase that number, because there is a credibility factor there. I mean, these people are very well-trained observers.
Well, I'm sure you know John Lear, since he's there in Las Vegas.
Yes.
John's been a friend of mine for many years, and he talked a lot about subject of UFOs, and it cost him a job a long time ago. And hopefully we've moved past that point now where people lose their jobs over this sort of thing. You think so?
Well, we were very impressed, as I mentioned, at that meeting in Washington when it became obvious with multiple people sitting around the table. There was no kind of giggle factor. This was a serious discussion about science, about analysis, about procedure. There was no caution, there was no giggle factor. So we thought that was, from all of the FAA personnel that were present in the room at that time, we thought that was a very, very positive sign.
Well, I was about to ask, what do you imagine the FAA attitude, if you had any private conversations with the people there, about the fact that, well, my gosh, not only are there incredible sightings, but in Mexico, near Mexico City, as I'm sure you're aware, there have actually been collisions with UFOs. So it seems to me, if nothing else, a matter of straight out air safety to be trying to figure out what's going on here.
That's exactly right. Now, the air safety issue has not come up on the radar screen, excuse the pun, in the United States to the same extent as South America. We know that, for example, in addition to Mexico, the Chilean Air Force and airlines in the past couple of decades have had a couple of near misses. And that has prompted the Chilean government to take UFOs extremely seriously. They formed an organization called CEFAA. And our organization's in touch with CEFAA for that reason. There's a big air safety issue, in our opinion, with the multiple low-flying triangular aircraft that have been seen and documented over the United States airspace in the last 10 years. And that's one of the features that we've really focused on in the last year or year and a half since our hotline opened. We've had between 100 and 150 calls, reports of extremely low-flying triangular objects. We think that the kinds of altitudes that are being reported with these triangular craft are unsafe, and they may constitute a safety hazard.
Well, the one that came over my wife and myself was 150 feet or so in the air. That was really low.
And that was a silent?
Oh, deadly, absolutely silent. We were near the house, about a quarter mile away from the house here, and my wife said, "Oh, my God, what's that?" She was in the passenger seat. We stopped the car, pulled over to the side of the road here in Brump, and it was gigantic, Colum. I thought I'd told you about this.
You mentioned it, actually, last time.
Yeah, this gigantic black triangle with a red light on the front, white lights on the back of the triangle,
yeah.
Otherwise flat. It had to be 150 feet or 200 feet from one point of the triangle to the other. Monstrous thing. We almost had a full moon. That went away. The stars went away. It passed directly over our heads. It was not flying. It was floating. It was defying gravity. And we stood there and watched it float out across the valley, headed toward the west-northwest, right out toward Area 51. And we just watched it go across the whole valley. Our mouths were on our chest, our chins on our chest, and we came home and compared notes, you know. It was unbelievable.
So that was moving in the direction of Area 51?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that we've been really interested in doing is putting the exact locations of all of the sightings that we've got, and we're at 130 to 140 of the kinds of craft that you've just described,
mm-hmm.
all over the country, and we put them on a map, and then we plotted on the same map the locations of Air Force Material Command and Air Mobility Command Air Force bases. These are a subset of United States Air Force bases all over the country. And the reason we're doing that is because they are, the two commands control the logistics of troop and equipment deployment within the United States and actually internationally. But we have put these on a map, and this is on our website, and we find that there is a close correlation between the locations of the UFO sightings and the flight paths between these Air Force Material Command and Air Mobility Command Air Force bases. Now, we don't know the interpretation of that, whether this is an unacknowledged aircraft that is being flown by the United States Air Force, or that it's some kind of monitoring that's going on. In other words, it's not ours. There are two separate explanations, but what we've done to extend this particular study is we've contacted MUFON, you know, the Mutual UFO Organization.
Of course.
And we've also contacted Larry Hatch, who is manager of one of the largest UFO databases in the world, and we've persuaded both those groups to give us their data. And we've done exactly the same thing with their data as with our data. So now we have three separate databases where we've put them on maps of the United States. The MUFON database is close to 100 sightings of black triangular objects, and the Larry Hatch is over 300. So we have three separate databases that are saying essentially the same thing. There does seem to be a clustering on the flight paths between the Air Force Material Command, Air Force Bases, and Air Mobility Command, mm-hmm. In these three separate databases. And the reason we compared databases was just to see if we were getting a skewed sample. And it looks like we're not. So we find that particularly interesting, but we still do not want to come down completely on the side that this is an unacknowledged aircraft. It may simply be a very intense monitoring that's going on.
Well, if there were others here visiting and monitoring us, they would be very interested, I would imagine, in our military bases, wouldn't they?
Yes. The two focuses in the United States are Scott Air Force Base, which is headquarters of the Air Force Material Command, and Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which is obviously very well known, goes back in history, you know, as the alleged parking place for the crashed UFO recovery.
Yes, and internment location for aliens, it is said by some, and aliens that have passed on, it is said by others, and lots of stories
about
that.
That's the rumor. So the two centers in the United States where a lot of these sightings cluster around are Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and Scott Air Force Base. And you may remember the famous Illinois sighting by four police officers.
Oh, yes.
In early 2000. That was actually centered around Scott Air Force Base. That object, according to the police officers that we interviewed, flew over the perimeter of Scott Air Force Base.
Has NIDS reached any conclusion with regard to that amazing sighting?
That was really the beginning of our interest in these large triangular wedge-shaped objects, The fact that it was so near Scott Air Force Base, it's one of 130 sightings that we now have, but we're fairly sure that it was associated with Scott Air Force Base, or else it was monitoring Scott Air Force Base. So, short answer to your question, Art, is that we haven't come down on either side yet.
Huh. Do you have any personal best guesses about whether we're dealing with aircraft that our military has designed, or aircraft that our military may have designed with help?
No, that's not an easy question to answer, because essentially you run out of data very, very quickly. I mean, the easiest thing in the world is to overinterpret the data, and that's where that is going. But we think if we publicize the findings that I've just described from the three separate databases, that if this is an unacknowledged aircraft, then people are refueling it, people are flying it, people are maintaining these aircraft all around the country. So somebody's going to come forward at some stage to admit it.
Is it fair to say that if these are our unacknowledged aircraft, that we have mastered the ability to defy, apparently, gravity?
We have. If the eyewitness testimony that we've gathered over the last year and a half is accurate, then And if these are unacknowledged aircraft, we have mastered technology that is silent, that's capable of jumping, literally jumping across the sky, because we've had multiple descriptions of that. And by that I mean being in one place at 1 second, and a couple of seconds later being several miles down.
Disappearing and then reappearing, like a jump.
And that is pretty impressive technology. And these are separate eyewitness descriptions. Pretty compelling eyewitness description in the January 2000 sighting in Illinois, from two separate police officers, described the same thing, that this object seemed to be right close to him at one second, and then a couple of seconds later was a few miles down the way. And that is a repetitive feature of these descriptions. So we're pretty confident that the eyewitness descriptions are corroborative. So if it is an unacknowledged aircraft, we have some very advanced technology.
Indeed. In fact, I was going to say, if we have learned how to defy gravity or take a craft of the mass and size that I saw and fly it utterly silently above your head so you could hear. I was listening to crickets a quarter mile away as this thing came over my head, and it didn't even make a whisper, not even a shh, nothing. We'll be right back. Cullum, hold it right there, okay?
Yeah.
Stay right there. I'm Art Bell. I've been drifting on the sea. Morning, everybody. Cullum Colliher is here from NIDS, the National Institute for Discovery Science, largest private investigative agency of its type in the world, the chief reporting agency now for the FAA. They investigate UFOs, paranormal stuff. They're the biggest, they're the best, and if you have a report for them, there's a number you can call, a hotline number, and it's here somewhere. God, where'd I put it? Just wrote it down a few minutes ago. Here it is, 702-798-1700. They've got the people, the resources, the money. They can get it done. That's 702-798-1700. If it happens to you, they'll be there for you. All right, once again with Cullum Colliher of NIDS, and we're going to now dive into a few reports that NIDS has received. We've got some tape actualities for you, I think they're called. Cullum, welcome back.
Thank you, Art.
Under the category of, okay, so what kind of reports have you been getting?
Well, it's been pretty busy in the last few weeks, and it seems to be escalating. That's what we've noticed. But I just want to run through a few of the things that we're working on, and include one of the animal mutilations that we're working on towards the end.
Okay.
About 10 days ago, we got a call from a police officer who had been on vacation with three other law enforcement officers. He was up in Voyageur National Park. That's located in northern Minnesota. It's way up by Lake Superior. In fact, it's about the most northern part of the United States.
Hmm.
Next up is Canada. And so there were four vacationing law enforcement officers. About 1 a.m., one of them woke up, and this was about 10 days ago, to see a very bright object in the sky. And they assumed it was either a very large planet or something, and then it started to move. And, you know, we really solicit testimony from law enforcement officers because we think they're very good, well-trained observers. I wanted to play you a short segment of what one of the officers had mentioned to us. It was this began around 12:15 to 12:30 in the morning, and this was about 10 days ago.
Okay.
In northern Minnesota.
All right.
12:50 a.m. or in the morning.
Uh-huh. Okay.
There's four of us camping on this very, very, very remote area. Basically rivers and bays, you know, and cliffs and stuff like that. It's very remote.
Uh-huh.
At National Park, we're camping at one of their campsites, and there's four of us in two tents. And me and my friend were kind of half asleep in our tent, and my other two friends, one of them is kind of asked the other guy, well, what star is that? Something like that. And the other one gets up and looks at it, and well, it's no star, just apparently had like a ring around it or something like that. And I was, what color was it? Is it red? And it was red. And like a ring around it or something, and it started moving around. The long and the short of it is we watched this thing for close to an hour. It was in kind of the same general area of the sky, but it would go up and down and sideways, back and forth, and doing like almost like loops.
It was like loop stuff.
Just or like almost like figure eights and loop de loops in the sky, and it would disappear and come back, and it was completely clear that night, not a cloud in the sky. You could see all the stars. So it's not like it was going behind a cloud bank or anything. And then we finally got out a pair of binoculars and looked at it. And when I looked at it, two binoculars about dropped them, it freaked me out so much. It was, you very definitely see a bright center light, which was white. White, bright center light. There's two brighter lights off on each side, which were kind of a reddish color. And then there was a small light to the top and one small light to the bottom from the center. Four of us had seen that. And,
did you all look at the binoculars?
Three of us did.
That's his testimony, and we've actually gone into we've talked to all four people now, and they're pretty well backing each other up. We independently interviewed them, and it sounds like what they saw was something that was zigzagging and doing figure eight formations in the area of the sky, totally silently, no sound, for about an hour. And we regard these guys as being pretty, you know, responsible individuals.
Sure. I've noticed that I get a whole lot of emails from police officers, Colin. A lot of emails. So they're not afraid to report. They don't have the same job considerations as pilots, but they're incredibly trained eyewitnesses, well-trained eyewitnesses, and...
That's exactly right, and that's why we want to solicit as many sightings from police officers as possible. And the other segment that we're really focusing on is the security police, either retired security police officers or current security police officers from Air Force bases around the country. And we're accumulating a separate database of sightings that these people are giving us.
Well, now, there's an interesting question. Is there a disproportionately large number of military officers who report these things?
Not so far, but we think it's getting better all the time. You know, there's always this reluctance on the part of currently employed military officers. Most of what we get are retired people, and so therefore... Most of what we get would be from the security police officers would be historical cases, but
well, that figures though. I mean, who's got less to lose than somebody who's already retired?
That's exactly right. I think people, you know, could be very easily tracked if they're currently employed and they report stuff to us. The other thing that we're really interested in is to extend the field research that we've been doing, and that's something we've really focused on. To coin a term, the ranch in Utah.
Yes.
For several years, and we've also focused in northern New Mexico.
But so the audience understands, this was a ranch in Utah.
Yes.
Where really strange things were happening on a fairly regular basis, actually. And Bob Bigelow bought the ranch and set up all kinds of surveillance and all kinds of monitoring, and they had scientists on site and all the rest of it. And this has been going on. How long ago did Bob buy the ranch?
It was in August, September of '96. So we're coming up to 5-year anniversary.
It was a big secret for a long time, wasn't it?
It was a big secret, and one of the reasons that we wanted to keep it low key was because there had been a tendency for people to start camping out with picnic hampers and this kind of thing in the area just to see if they could see a UFO.
Mm.
But as time went on, you know, those people became less and less. But right now we've documented approximately between 70 and 80 separate incidents on that ranch.
Wow.
And in the area. And most of those incidents are really difficult to repeat. In other words, we never get the same thing happening more than once. It's almost like a training exercise, so to speak.
Yeah, Bob came on and told me a story that curled my hair about the ranch, and that was the towers that he had set up.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, God, that was an incredible story. With surveillance cameras on each one of the towers, and the lines were cut, and they reviewed the videotape, but it was nothing. It was the most amazing story.
That was one of the stranger ones, because most of the phenomena traditionally that have happened outside the range of the video cameras. And this, the one that Bob Bigelow talked to you about, I'm pretty sure was one that was actually caught dead on the video camera. So very briefly for the audience, what happened was we had a string of video cameras on these telephone poles about 300 feet apart on this area, and one video camera was looking at a second video camera, and then there was other video cameras looking 120 degree intervals, so there was a total of 360. But what happened was that the power was cut on three video cameras simultaneously, because we saw the timestamp showed at 8:36 p.m. that the power was cut. But exactly at the time that the power was cut, we had another video camera looking at that telephone pole, so we knew what was going on, and the resolution was good enough for us to go back and video enhance what was seen on the camera. And we could actually get good enough enhancement to see a very small red light underneath the video cameras that lost power. The video camera resolution was that good. In other words, we could easily see somebody interfering with that camera.
Something.
All we saw was nothing. We saw absolutely nothing on the camera, except we saw them losing power. So we knew that the timestamps were correct. And at the same time, there was a... on the telephone pole that contained the video camera that I've just described, there was a cord that was cut... and it was about a foot to a foot and a half of wiring removed from that cord.
Removed.
It was cut. And, so we had one of the best forensics labs in the country look at that wire, and what came out was that the wire had been cut with a single-bladed rusty knife. Now, what do you make
impossible.
Of that?
Well, I make out that it's impossible. It's impossible. If you have one camera, timestamped, looking at another, and this occurring while you can see nothing as you review it, that's impossible.
Well, that's exactly what our initial take was. Now, the three cameras that lost power, this was not just a power glitch. When we went back to the cameras and we checked exactly what had happened, the wiring had been forcibly ripped out of the cameras. And there was wiring going down the telephone pole, and there was anchored to the telephone pole by about half a roll of duct tape. Now, I don't know if you've ever tried to take duct tape off wiring in the hot summer. You know, it's a very sticky, messy job.
Sure.
All of the duct tape was gone. In other words, half a roll of duct tape was gone. It has never been found. Plastic brackets that were anchoring the wiring to the telephone pole were also ripped out and gone.
Oh, so this is impossible.
All of this happened on video camera, so to speak.
Yeah, plain view.
In plain view.
So and, what did you all conclude?
We had multiple scenarios where maybe somebody had crawled up in exact line with the telephone pole, so they were out of view to try to do this, but every scenario that we dreamed up was impossible, because we had enough data from the video footage to rule out pretty well everything except something that was happening outside the visible range. And that's where we kept it, because all of the other scenarios did not work. And that's one of between 70 and 80 separate incidents that happened on that ranch.
Yeah, I was about to ask, Gollum, any idea why this particular ranch, both before you took possession of it and after you did, was the focus of so much abnormal activity?
We know that the ranch is not particularly special. In other words, one of the first things that we did when we took possession of it was to talk to people in ever-increasing radii away from that ranch. In other words, the neighbors, the friends, anybody who lived nearby. And the testimony that we got was that that ranch is not unique at all. The kinds of phenomena that were happening on the ranch were happening to the neighbors as well. They were happening, you know, around the area. So
in what sort of radius?
We went out to between half a mile to 1 mile, maybe a couple of miles.
Huh.
And many of the neighbors in that area, obviously a certain percentage refused to talk for whatever reason. A lot of people want to maintain their privacy up in northeastern Utah. But the ones that did talk, there was a lot of confirmation, a lot of corroboration of the kinds of things that were documented on this property were happening in the general area. And that includes everything from animal mutilations to silvery discs that were seen during daylight to large black triangular-shaped objects, small black triangular-shaped objects, and then a whole variety intermixed with these craft, a whole variety of paranormal phenomena, things appearing, disappearing, almost like poltergeists.
What is it? What is the present state at the ranch? Is this still going on?
There is activity still ongoing at the ranch. It's sporadic, and it goes up and down, so it is completely unexpected. There are no patterns that we've been able to discern in terms of when we can predict, where and when we can predict. But we do know that if we take a look at between 70 and 80 separate incidents that have happened, the majority of the incidents that have happened are in the paranormal camp, and then there's a substantial minority where there's physical, it looks like nuts and bolts craft. And there's a variety of nuts and bolts craft have been observed by many people, including scientists, including other investigators, and including neighbors. So there's a whole bunch of different eyewitnesses that we can call on. And I've mentioned some of the incidents on previous shows with you, but they are pretty spectacular, but the bottom line is that none of them have been repeated.
Colin, how much reason would there be for people to take at least a percentage of UFO sightings and put them in the paranormal category?
It's really very, very difficult to separate. In our experience, it's very difficult to separate, in other words, to draw a line between the actual sightings of what we would term, for want of a better word, nuts and bolts type craft,
mm-hmm.
from this continuum of paranormal phenomena. And that includes balls of light, it includes discarnate voices, it includes black amorphous objects, it includes creatures. So there's a whole variety of, and then there's the smells, there's strong pungent odors associated with these phenomena. There's transient magnetic fields that we've measured 6 or 7 times in association with these phenomena.
What? Let me stop you. What kind of odors?
That's odors, usually strong sulfur-containing odors.
Sulfur.
Yeah. Several times where there's a phenomena in the area, there's a strong smell of sulfur, and that's been documented in the literature. So it's not that unusual. It's a very distinctive odor.
Well, if I see a craft and it's defying gravity, or it disappears and then reappears a couple of miles later or many miles later, I might be very tempted to put it into the category. Certainly not rule out the category of the paranormal.
That's our position, because I think there's been, historically, there's been a mutual suspicion between the people who have traditionally studied paranormal phenomena and the people who have traditionally studied UFOs. There's this suspicion from both camps that both of them somehow are really not studying the right thing. And our position is follow the data. Just follow what the data are telling us. And the data are telling us is that there is no obvious line that you can draw in the sand between the UFO phenomena and the paranormal phenomena. And one of our Science Advisory Board members, Jacques Vallée, who is an eminent UFO researcher who has been doing this for decades, says exactly the same thing in his field of investigations in the different parts of the country as well as outside this country. If you dig deep enough and you ask questions with an open mind and you can get people to trust you, you will start hearing the paranormal variations on the UFO phenomenon. Whereas if you go into an investigation primarily looking for the engineering characteristics of the craft and nothing else, you shut out everything else, that's what you'll get in the testimony.
Gotcha. All right, hold on, Cullum. Cullum Cullaher is my guest from NIDS. I'm Art Bell. And from the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM. Art Bell. If me back holds up, everybody, we'll go into open lines at 1 a.m. Pacific in the next 30 minutes or so. But we're going to do one more segment with Cullum Cullaher from NIDS. And I want to remind everybody out there that NIDS has a hotline. They've got the resources. They've got the people. They've got the scientists. All you've got to do is provide the reports. The hotline number is area code 702-798-1700. So write it down. Put it on your fridge. Do whatever you do with little notes like this, along with 911 and whatever else you have handy. Remember, area code 702-798-1700. Cullum Cullaher will be right back. Once again, NIDS Cullum Cullaher. Cullum, you mentioned something earlier in the hour about animal mutilations.
Yeah, that's the third major arm that we focus on at NIDS, and I'm sure your listeners are more than familiar with the specifics of animal mutilations, but it goes, as you know, comes and goes in waves. But right now we're dealing with a case that happened in the last 10 days in Montana. And we've been in touch with law enforcement officers in Montana for quite some time. But one of the problems that we've been having is that a lot of the ranchers are very reluctant to report these mutilations. So we're pretty sure we get maybe only 10% of mutilations that happen.
Why are they reluctant?
A whole variety of reasons, including fear of what the neighbors will think. If there's a particularly religious ranching family, some people see the mutilations as being, you know, profoundly demon-like.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also, if there's several mutilations happen on ranchers' land, we've had reports from ranchers of banks calling in notes because they deem the ranchers incompetent at animal management.
Oh, well, that'll slow you down, all right.
That really is an economic deterrent for sure. And we've had actual cases where that has happened, where banks have come in and said, okay, guys, you're not up to it. But we got an interesting case in the last 10 days, and this was an animal that was seen very, very healthy on the Monday and was found on the Wednesday morning. It had, very briefly, and I'm looking at a photograph right now, it's a large part of its jaw, the flesh around the jaw, had been removed, exposing what looks like very, very clean bone. And the cut around, there's a circular oval cut extending from the nose all the way up to just below the eye and then down to below the lower jaw.
Sounds
and all
like,
of that is missing.
Sounds like what my dentist wants to do to me.
Yeah, that's, likewise. Yeah, I've got a dental appointment tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
Looking forward to it.
I understand. That's horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Yeah, and the left eye as well is missing, as well as the eyelid. And according to the rancher and the law enforcement guy that we've been working with, this animal was very, very healthy. Its rectum and genitalia were removed in a very, very clean incision. So we've got that animal, as well as the tongue. The tongue was removed from deep back in the animal's mouth, apparently. So we're going to conduct as thorough a forensic examination of this as possible.
That's where I was going next. Any idea of what sort of instrument was used to remove all this?
What we're going to what we're in the middle of doing actually is making sure that we can get these skin samples or hide samples to a good forensic pathologist so that they can look under a low power microscope and determine what kind of cutting instrument. But according to the anecdote or the testimony from the rancher and the law enforcement officer, the cut was sharper than any knife that these guys could come up with, because they tried cutting a bit of hide from the same animal, and they couldn't mimic the kinds of sharpness that was seen on the animal. These guys are pretty shaken by this, because they have never had anything like this on their ranch before. There was a similar case 10 days previously, about 4 miles away. We missed that case because the guy just didn't want to report it. And we know that area in Montana in the 1970s had dozens and dozens of animal mutilations, because we documented that separately through another law enforcement guy that we've been working with up in Montana. We know that the animal mutilation phenomenon is continuing. We know that it's pervasive. But we also know that, as I mentioned, we're only hearing about 10% of what's actually happening.
I've just got a million questions about this. How possible is it to rule out devil worshippers, that sort of thing?
There's been several police investigations. Every area that we've actually focused on, and I'm talking mostly about northeastern Utah, and then further up into towards Logan, Utah, which is at the very north end of Utah. We've focused on northern Montana, and we've focused on northern New Mexico. In each case, police officers, law enforcement officers, have conducted in-depth investigations into cult activity. By and large, in each case, cult activity has been ruled out. There's a particular set of operations that cult members seem to go for, and that is mostly they use much smaller animals, and mostly there is more of a random frenzied kind of cutting up of smaller animals.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare for cult members to attack the larger animals simply for logistical purposes, because you know you're going after a 1,000-pound animal in a cult like frenzy. It the animal usually reacts.
Yeah, you're liable to get your butt kicked.
Exactly.
All right, but then what? Let's imagine what other possible agent could be at work here. You know, people have frequently, for example, cited military aircraft seen near these mutilations, and I've always wondered, why would our military need to go take some fellow's cow and cut it up? It just doesn't make sense. The military want cows, they can get all they want.
Well, you know, we're getting exactly the same reports as what you just mentioned, where the famous or infamous black helicopters.
Right.
They're not as common now as they were in the 1970s and 1980s, but we still get reports of that. In fact, we got reports in from Cache County, Utah, in the last couple of years, where again we're talking law enforcement agents have reported these silent helicopters that have come in, and animals have been mutilated, and the helicopters have been seen. So there is a definite military involvement. We've also had testimony from a number of sheriffs, including Colorado, a couple in Colorado actually, where they've actually come upon the helicopter close to a mutilated animal. They have followed those helicopters to Air Force bases. We don't know if that's a monitoring operation by the military, but we do know that the helicopters appear to be real.
Oh, I understand. I just, you know, you like in any crime, you look at means and opportunity,
yeah,
and motive, and you look for motive, and I just cannot imagine a scenario where our military needs to pluck cows from farmers' fields or cut them up in the fields. It just doesn't make sense. If they want a farm, they can buy a farm. Bob can do it, they can do it. If they need a farm, if they need cows, they can get cows. It doesn't make sense, Colin.
Well, we've heard the theory that maybe there's a squad of where military people are trained to kill. You know, in other words, assassination training, where the object of the exercise is to train people to carry out silent assassinations that are close to. You know, houses, and that these animals are victims of training exercises. But again, that's far fetched. In other words,
well, I'll say,
that's breaking the law. That's outside the normal procedure that we know about in terms of military operations. But that's certainly one theory, and we've heard any number of wild theories, but we do know that there's sufficient evidence and sufficient documentation to implicate that the military is at least extremely interested. At the very least, it's monitoring the animal mutilation phenomenon.
Well, call me wild and crazy, but the one that I always bought into was aliens and the reason, environmental monitoring. In other words, when you begin looking at the reproductive systems and organs of cows, you're looking at perhaps a pretty good read on the state of the environment in any given area, and I always imagined that one.
Well, the other possibility also is harvesting. That's one of the things, you know, my background is in biochemistry, and one of the things we always used to do when I was in more of in biochemical research was, if we wanted to generate large amounts of antibody against something, we injected animals and then we harvested the blood or the tissue.
Oh, yes.
In order to purify these compounds. Likewise, if you want to grow viruses, if you want to grow bacteria sometimes, or other parasites, you inject them into an animal, you wait for a week or whatever, and then you harvest them. Now, obviously, again, we're talking speculation here with animal mutilations, but there does seem to be a focus on reproductive organs. There does seem to be a focus on what one would call epithelial tissue, and you know, various organisms and viruses do grow preferentially in reproductive tissue. Mm. The other aspect is that the reproductive tissue is very, very useful. From a harvesting perspective, if you want to generate stem cells are very much in the news right now because of political issue. But if you want to generate stem cells, you go right for reproductive tissue.
But this phenomena has been going on long before stem cell research got underway, hasn't it?
Not really. Stem cells were really focused on, especially the blood stem cells in the 60s. Late 60s, so it's contemporaneous.
And that's about when it began, or when did this animal mutilation?
Animal mutilations really caught the public eye late 1969 and 1970, and then it began to peak in 1973 to 75. There was really the entire decade of the 1970s was the major peak, where pretty well every state west of the Mississippi was reporting animal mutilation.
Well, with that many going on, Colin, shouldn't there be at least 10 or 20% of the cases solved with people in jail?
That's the whole enigma, because that's where the real anomaly is located in the animal mutilation phenomenon. Not a single person has been caught or charged for mutilating these animals. And the usual modus operandi is there's no tracks, there's no vehicle tracks, there's no people tracks, and usually there's no even predator tracks around these animals. And that's one of the things that was striking about this recent animal in Montana. the rectum had been cored out, and then usually when the animal begins to swell up, it pushes the intestines out. Now, any predators or scavengers will go immediately for that area and start ripping it open, food-wise, because it's very accessible. These intestines were protruding, but they were absolutely pristine. They were untouched. So we're pretty sure that this animal has not been touched by predators or scavengers. Obviously, we'll have to do the histology. We'll have to do the science to document that. But
shouldn't there be a chemical reason why predators wouldn't touch it?
Yeah, there are plenty of chemical reasons why predators wouldn't touch an animal, and that's if they've been injected with something or if they've been subjected to some heavy-duty shock that would release a lot of toxins. That the animals would not be touched. And that is a feature of, as you know, of animal mutilations, where the animals are avoided. One of the interesting things about this particular animal in Montana was that when the law enforcement officers and the owner cut away from the neck, looking to see if anybody had stuck a needle into the jugular or whatever in order to kill this animal, they found an area just underneath the jaw that was bright green. And they don't know what it is, so we have a sample of that, and we're going to subject it to forensic analysis. But one of the previous cases that we've worked on in Utah involved a bright blue gel-like substance that was smeared over the animal's eye, and we subjected that to every conceivable chemical analysis that you can think of.
And?
We actually used about 10 different labs for that analysis around the country. And we came up with compounds that had been added to the gel. Compounds, one of them was BHT and the other one was formaldehyde, which obviously did not come from the animal. So we're fairly sure in a small number of cases that compounds are added to these animals for whatever reason.
All right. We're coming to the end of this hour, and I've got to have you on the air a whole lot more. So we're going to schedule you on a much more regular basis.
Oh, that sounds really good.
In the meantime, tell us about your website again.
Yeah, we'd like people to log on to our website as well as call our hotline, because you can send a report electronically. Just log on to www.nidsci.org. You'll see that the homepage, and then you'll see file a report. Just click on that. We have a whole set of different report forms you can fill out, including if you see entities or paranormal type phenomena, you can click on that. If you see a UFO, you can click on that. If you're to report an animal mutilation, we've got a separate form for that. And if you want to call us on the telephone, we've got people standing by at area code 702-798-1700.
Normally what hours?
Normally until 9 p.m. every night Pacific time. That's midnight Eastern time. And from 8 a.m. Pacific time every day. And then on the weekends until 5 p.m. on Saturdays.
All right. And again, that was area code 702-798-1700. Seeing you back here on the air with me again soon, Colin. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome, Art.
Good night, my friend.
A pleasure.
Good night.
Good night.
That'd be me, all right. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. And back after quite an interesting time on vacation, and then followed by a kind of a really strange occurrence with a Philippine newspaper, the largest newspaper in the Philippines, and then my back going out and an MRI, and I've got so much to tell you about that we're going to go into open lines here in a moment, and I'm going to tell you all about it. So stay right where you are.
Oh, good morning, everybody.
All right, I'm going to take a few moments out here, and I'm going to sort of explain a few things to you. As you know, I came back from vacation just before July 1st, and I was due to come back on the air July 2nd. That was the plan. And on July 1st, on Sunday, July 1st, the largest newspaper in the Philippines, the Philippine Daily Inquirer, decided for some mysterious reason to publish this piece of utter trash that had been flying around on the internet for two or three years, almost 3 years, actually. Some fool out there wrote this horrid, racist piece of trash that they signed my name to, you know, just tearing apart the people of the Philippines and their culture and everything else, and signed my name to it. It had been floating around the internet. We'd been denying it for years and responding to every message, angry message from a Filipino, American, or Filipino. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, even though we had lots of things posted on our site, which could have easily been checked, had the newspaper checked with me or the network or the website, and as a matter of fact, in the original article they published, they quoted our website, but they didn't even bother to check the damn thing. And so they published this article demeaning the Filipino people and their culture in the worst way you can imagine. And it had the effect you can imagine. We put a few of the death threats that I got as a result of this up on the website, but there were hundreds. There were hundreds. You just can't imagine. It was mortifying. It was awful. And so these death threats were rolling in, and we thought it appropriate to get some guards here, and we did get guards, armed guards here at the house. And I decided as soon as we had the guards in that I was going back on the air. Well, that was we had guards in by, this occurred on Sunday. Monday I was supposed to be on the air, wasn't. Then I decided I would go on the air Thursday after the armed guards got here. And I was about to go on the air Wednesday, late Wednesday. I took a little solar candle, which are really cool. They're solar candles. They have a little, they have a charge thing on top, you know, a little solar panel on top. And it's shaped kind of like a candle, and it's got an LED light in it, orange, really neat. And you let it charge, and, you know, it charges, and then for several hours you have a solar candle. It's really neat. And I took it out to my front porch and put it down to charge. And as I put it down, crack, went my back. This horrible sound, you could hear it feet away. And I was on my knees. And from then on, it got worse, a lot worse. So that's what kept me off the air, was my back. Now, I just had an MRI, and I'm going to tell you about the MRI in a moment. I'm going to do what most would not do, and I'm going to read you two lines from, I'm not going to mention the company, the people that did the MRI, the radiologist came back and said, along with a whole lot of other things, said, don't hold me to these words. Right dorsolateral L3-4 disc bulge abutting the right L4 nerve root in the lateral recess and causing a mild degree of right L3 foraminal narrowing. Then it says broad-based disc bulge at L4-L5 causing moderate lateral spinal canal narrowing. This could affect the L5 nerve roots in the lateral recesses. Please correlate with symptomology. So that's a little bit from what they determined from the radiologist. They just faxed this to me. As a matter of fact, today I just got it. Haven't even talked to the doctor about it. So I hardly know what all of that means. But it sounds like something's reaching out and touching a nerve in there, and it's got me all bent over even now. So I was putting up with that. And then a few days into that, check this out. As I said earlier, I have a bridge, lower molar back there, you know, type bridge, covers what would be the space of three teeth, right? Anchored to two teeth, and then there's a space. Anyway, my face began to look like a basketball. Here I am all humped over with my back. My face started to look like a basketball. I had this horrible toothache, and I went to the dentist, and they x-rayed, and they said, oh, well. And going to the dentist with my back like that was really something. Sitting in a dentist chair with your back like that, oh, that's a real joy. So here I am in the dentist chair going, you know, the mouth hurts and the back hurts. And they x-rayed and they said, well, it's a failed root canal. A failed root canal underneath a bridge. And maybe there's nothing you can do, or they can try drilling down through the bridge to correct it, but a failed root canal. So here I was. The two worst pains you can nearly imagine, you know, nerves in your back and nerves in your teeth, all flexing at once. At any rate, I took it. I just went and got the MRI that I just taught you. Somebody said, why don't you show the MRI? If I had it, I would. I'd scan that sucker and put it up there, and I may yet if they give me a copy of it. And I think they will if I ask. At any rate, if you look on the website under vacation and MRI photos from Art, you'll see the MRI machine that I went into. Talk about claustrophobic. Holy mackerel. It's a little tiny tube, or it seems little tiny. The top of the tube when you're in there, and they put you all the way in, is about 5 inches from your nose. So you're really close in there. This MRI machine makes a racket. There are all these noises that begin, and like that. And then another one starts resonating with that. It sounds like five machines are going around you, and they probably are. And, of course, it's an incredible magnetic field. And I experimented. I mean, after we've talked about with MRIs, I thought, all right, fine. Let's see what I can sense, what I can feel. And so as I was going, it took about 35 minutes, I think, in the machine itself, which is, believe me, as long as you ever want to be in there. And I thought, I'm going to close my eyes, and I'm going to see what I can see. I was relatively dim in there, rather dark. And so I closed my eyes, and what I could see was pretty amazing. It was kind of like clouds of light were forming before my closed eyes, if you can imagine that. Kind of like a cloud, only they were moving very fast. And one would form and move out of my vision. One would form and move out of my vision. Pretty fast, about that fast. One would form, move out of my vision. As this machine was going around me, I suppose, is the way it works, making a real racket. But it was so cool. I didn't see a ghost. I didn't see anything of that sort. But I did see these white clouds forming and moving. And it must have been the magnetic field. At any rate, I thought that was amazing. And when I came out, I talked to the man that you see. As a matter of fact, I took a picture of his back. He was at the monitoring the equipment there. You can see the computers that he was monitoring. And I asked him, I said, have people reported seeing strange things to you? You do a lot of MRIs, obviously. He said, oh, yes, all the time. He said, yes, people report a lot of strange things. Fellows sitting right there in front of the computers. And I didn't engage him further in conversation about what they saw. But I did take the opportunity to just lie there, because there's nothing else to do, believe me, and see what I could see. And I saw these white clouds just continually forming and moving out of my vision. And when the machine went off, they went away. So there you are, for whatever it's worth. Now, if you'll go to my website under, what's it under? What's New? And you'll go to Vacation and MRI Photos from Art. You'll see a line of photographs here, and I'll briefly explain to you what they are. One is of my RV, our RV, I should say. A lot of people said, where are your antennas? You know, well, all the other photos I've taken of the RV don't show the antennas. But I thought I would go ahead and show in this photograph. You can see on the right-hand side of the photograph is a 2-meter 440 antenna. On the left-hand side is a screwdriver-type antenna for HF work. And you'll note that I have extended, put a capacity hat on this screwdriver-type antenna, extended across the top of the RV, and it incredibly increases the range of the HF rig in there. And I was talking to people in Germany while I was rolling along on the road and just having a blast. So you can get a look at the RV and the antennas on it. Down from that, you'll see the windmills in California. As I came through California, mountains and mountains covered with windmills, and they were moving, by the way. We've had discussions about this on the air before. They were moving. So take a look. I should have had video so you could see they were moving. A lot of people said, well, they're all shut down because, you know, birds were flying into them. Well, they're not shut down, and the windmills were busily creating electricity as I came by, so I took a couple of shots for you. That's in there. Then if you go down a little further, you'll see a couple of shots of the network up in Oregon, a couple of the consoles and some of the people at the network in Oregon. And if you go down below that, you will see a picture of Bob Crane standing there in the middle of his favorite place, a chocolate shop. So that's obviously one of the places I went. I went to Fortuna, California, and visited with Bob and Sue Crane, and happened to catch Bob in this chocolate shop where he just bought all kinds of chocolate. You can see the expression on his face. He was a happy camper. Chocolate Bob. Then down below that is a picture of the Hardin Optical Company telescope box with Yeti, our newest addition to the family, type cat, poking his little troublemaking head out of the box. That's all he does, many hours every day, as many as he can be awake, is look for and usually finding trouble. Below that, you'll find a picture of the MRI machine, and then one a little further away with the technician who did the MRI. So, those are the additions to the photo album from this vacation that I had. I need a vacation from my vacation. Then if you'll go to What's New, you'll see PDI editorial on Art Bell email hoax. That's brand new as of tonight. You might want to read that. They just ran this editorial, one of many now that they have run in the newspaper about what happened. And I would suggest you take a look at that. If you click on that link for the editorial, it will take you to the editorial piece in the PDI. Actually, you'll go straight to Philippines, and it's in English, and you'll be able to read it. And it begins, last week we were had, or more precisely, one of our reporters, who also writes a column, was had. She fell victim to a hoax on the Internet. A media colleague of hers, who now works with a Channel News Asia, sent out an email on an item which she read on the Internet, saying that Art Bell, a radio talk show host, said nasty, racist things about Filipinos on his program, which is aired in the U.S. The writer-columnist wrote about what Bell reportedly said on his program. The entertainment editor made the column the lead item and the banner story on the entertainment page because the item was picked up by INQ7.net and placed on its website. It was read by tens of thousands of Filipinos and foreigners here and abroad. Hundreds of Filipinos here and abroad wrote hate mail to Art Bell. Some of them even threatened him and his family with harm, according to Bell's lawyers. The senior editors and the reader's advocate conducted an inquiry and found that the item about Art Bell was indeed a hoax. The Inquirer, as a corporate entity, apologized to Bell in the same column where the erroneous item had appeared. The columnist also apologized, and her apology was in the headline for the column for that day. The error was deemed so serious by the editors that they served explain why letters to the columnist and the entertainment editor. If they find the explanations of the two unsatisfactory, they'll be sanctioned according to a scale of penalties provided for by the Inquirer Code of Discipline. The item was also the subject of two editorial assessment meetings held last Monday and yesterday. The editors yesterday discussed a draft rule on information obtained over the new electronic and communication media. It will be incorporated in the Inquirer Manual of Editorial Policies. Why did the entertainment reporter columnist fall for the Art Bell hoax? Apparently, she thought that it was a real piece of news, having been posted on the Internet and relayed to her by media colleague who was once a reporter for ABS-CBN Network. Her nationalistic feeling was pricked by the racist things that Art Bell said in his radio program, and so she decided to bring them to the attention of her readers. It turned out the report was not true, that Bell never uttered any such things. Bell's lawyers said he denied the rumor more than 2 years ago. They said Bell could not have uttered such racist remarks because his wife is half Filipino. The editor was for treating the erring reporter columnist with some consideration and compassion. The editor said the Internet is a relatively new medium, and probably the reporter columnist was not aware that hoaxes and scams were also being posted there. I wonder how long they've been on the Internet. Other editors said the reporter columnist had the responsibility to check and double check every piece of information she obtains and decides to use in her column. She could have discovered that the very item she wrote about had been denied had she visited the Art Bell sites, whose addresses she herself wrote at the end of the column item. A little checking could have saved her and the paper a lot of embarrassment and grief. The publisher at last week's editorial assessment meeting stressed that reporters, writers, columnists, even editors have got to be wary of items posted on the Internet. The information highway is littered with a lot of trash, junk mail, rumors, hoaxes, and scams. Nothing can be taken at face value, but has to be checked and rechecked. The publisher said that the new communications media may have made the delivery of information faster, but it does not mean that all the information it is delivering is correct, accurate, and true. Perhaps in mitigation of our error, we may point out that other world-class publications like the New York Times and Washington Post have fallen for hoaxes and scams on the Internet. We're not the first and certainly not the last to fall for these hoaxes, rumors, and other bogus information offered on the Internet. But we're adopting safeguards to make sure that we don't fall again for such scams. All journalists, whether reporters, staff writers, columnists, or editors, have that constant universal obligation to make sure that everything they write about and publish is accurate and true. Joseph Pulitzer, the giant of American journalism, expressed it well when he said that a journalist must always remember three words, and they are accuracy, accuracy, accuracy. Through this editorial, we reiterate our apologies to Art Bell and to our readers for the column item that turned out to be a hoax on the Internet. We've learned a painful lesson, and we hope the new rules governing information obtained over the new media will help us avoid a repetition of a similar error. Well, that's it. If you want to read it, it's up on the website right now. But I thought perhaps I would read it to you. And, I don't know what we're going to do about the Internet. I don't have a clue what we're going to do. But obviously, there have got to be some sort of safeguards put in place. And all of this has got to be balanced against the First Amendment, the right of people to say what they want. But when things loosely put on the Internet, especially hoaxes with people's names attached to them, where it might be dangerous for such thing to appear in the mass media, when the Internet and its hoaxes begin to cross into the mainstream media, then we have a problem. And I don't know exactly how we balance it all out and enforce some sort of checks in all of this. We live in strange times indeed. And that was a sort of a prime example of what can go wrong. There's a whole lot right about the Internet. God knows I use it all the time, and I'm sure a lot of you do as well. In fact, I love it. But there's a big danger. They ran into it head on. So did I. That's kind of an update. There'll be more.
This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nod.
It is indeed. In a moment, we'll jump into open lines, whether you want to talk about what occurred to WJKM in Hartsville, Tennessee, or what's occurred in New Jersey, the sightings in New Jersey, astounding sightings in New Jersey, or anything else you've heard tonight. Now would be the time coming up, so stay right where you are. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. All right. I've got one more little item just before we go to the lines. Here it is. This is from Pravda. Now, Pravda is was certainly the official arm of the Soviet government, and is still really sort of the official arm of the Russian government. And they write as follows. This is unbelievable, I know, but it's from Pravda. It's an excerpt. A spy satellite can monitor a person's every movement, even when the target is indoors or deep in the interior of a building or traveling rapidly down a highway in a car in any kind of weather, cloudy, rainy, or stormy. There is no place to hide on the face of the Earth. It takes just 3 satellites to blanket the world with detection capacity. Now get this. Besides tracking a person's every action and relaying the data to a computer screen on Earth, amazing powers of satellites include, brace yourself, reading a person's mind, monitoring conversations, manipulating electronic instruments, and physically assaulting someone with a laser beam. Remote reading of someone's mind through satellite technology is quite bizarre, yet it is being done. It is a reality at present, not some futuristic dystopia. To those who might disbelieve my description of satellite surveillance, I'd simply cite a tried and true Roman proverb. Time reveals all things. So that's part of a first-person Russian testimony about what satellites are capable of doing. Now, most of it I could understand. The reading the mind thing from satellite, I'm still working on a little bit, as I imagine you are too. That's straight from Pravda. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art.
Hi there.
My name is Christine. I'm calling from Sierra, Washington.
Hello, Christy.
And I was, I wanted to talk about how your bad luck has coincided with this Filipino thing that's going on.
Oh, yes.
The power of negative energy may have had something to do with your bad luck recently.
Well, if it's not negative, I don't know what it is.
Oh, I was just hoping that your listeners out there, as well as I, we could all focus our positive energy on you to help you get better.
Yes.
And
healing positive white light. That's what I need.
That's. I just wanted
that
to
and occasional
that.
Painkillers.
Well, those help too. But I just wanted to give you my best wishes and hope for everybody to, you know, direct our positive
thank
energy
you,
towards you.
That's very sweet. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Take care. First time caller line. You are on the air. Hello,
Mr. Bell.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is C. I am about 30 miles from your Hartsville, Tennessee location.
Oh, really?
Yes,
did you hear that first hour?
I did, sir. I'm a 55-year-old retired TVA worker.
Oh, TVA worker?
Yes, sir. I was with them for about 21 years.
Okay. Maybe you can help bring some light to what my guest said. And Ted Randall said that he thinks there's something going on at that stalled TVA nuke site.
Most definitely, sir. Most definitely. What is happening at the site where I work at now? I've been listening to you for about a year. I just recently acquired the Chicago station, 890.
WLS?
Yes, sir. Before I was listening on FM, but now for some reason we can't get it. But anyway, I've been working this job security. I'm a security guard also.
Uh-huh.
And they're in present building a school. And I'm within seeing distance of the largest plant, fossil burning plant, in the state of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been witnessing some sort of a phenomenon coming to this plant on and off for the last 8 months.
What kind of phenomenon?
It turns the sky orange when it comes in. And there are craft above me spraying this chemtrail you talk about.
Mm-hmm.
They're spraying some sort of a mist. And when it settles in around the two largest stacks in the United States, the only other two like them are in Switzerland. I helped build both of these. Anyway, when this mist settles in around the plant, mm-hmm. You can still see the red lights on top of these 1,000 feet stacks, smokestacks. And this orange light is in behind this mist. It's a gigantic something. I don't know what it is. It makes no sound whatsoever. But it comes in, and the hair on your arm from the magnetism from this thing, I think it's sucking up the surface charge off of the gigantic two turbines that are over at the plant. I think it's sucking up the surface charge off of that and utilizing that static electricity, the magnetic field, to generate its own power. Do you understand what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I've been watching this pattern. It'll be gone, and something flew over me about, I'd say 200 feet, to your black object you were talking about. Had six square windows in it, and then when it realized that I was on the ground, it shut the lights off. But anyway, I'm 30 miles from your Hartsville plant, and there's definitely something going on there. And I think the pattern of it's gone for like 3 weeks, and then it comes back. And then it goes away for about 3 weeks, and then it comes back. It's here and there. It's here and there. It travels throughout the system in the TVA. I have some friends at the TVA that work as engineers in the office. And I'm going to get a hold of them and see if there's been a power spike. And I would be curious to find out if there would be a power spike at any of these other large plants, such as Hartsville, or Paradise, or Allen Steam Plant in Memphis, or this steam plant here. If there is a power spike at the time this craft, or whatever it is there, and also there is an awful lot of helicopter.
That's what I was told by my guest as well. All right, listen, my friend.
Yes,
stay in touch, please. There's obviously going to be a lot of investigation going on in that area. I think NIDS is going to get involved and a lot of others. So
I've got the hotline for that. I'm going to call these people, and I'm going to email you also a video that I took while this was in progress. Now, it's not a very good video, but like you've said many times on your program, it's either too good, it's too good, or it's not good enough.
That's right. All right. No, by all means, email it to me, and I'll get it up on the website.
I'll sure do it, sir.
All right. Thank you
and
very much.
Thank you very much for the call.
Okay, take care. It was you that made the call, but thank you. Well, whatever happened to radio station WJKM in Hartsville and the newspaper and about a quarter mile radius is not easily explained. Birds were destroyed. In fact, if you look at the photographs on my website and the way you, I guess I had to tell you how to get there, huh? Just in case you couldn't find them. If you go to program and tonight's guest info, and you just go down to Ted Randall's name, and you click on, there's photo number one and photo number two. They're both birds. Click on photo number two, and God, you know, here's a small bird. Its legs fully intact. Its wings burned from its body. Its wings burned from its body. And these birds, according to Ted, came out of midair. They were fried like this in midair, along with everything that happened to the newspaper, the radio station, the incredible amount of damage. These birds were plucked out of midair and burned. And nobody has even the slightest idea what could cause this. It was some kind of energy pulse. An EMP pulse, a harp-type pulse, who knows? But somebody out there is quite obviously doing it. Or somebody's. Or our government. Or maybe the Russian government. You heard what I just read you, right? So, what the hell? Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello? Going once.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Art, how are you?
I'm... First time callers, area code 775-727-1222. I've got to ask you to try again here. The only thing that we don't allow on the air is people giving their last names.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. I bleeped it out. So your name is Mark.
My name is Mark, yes.
Okay, go ahead, Mark.
I was at work here, and my wife had called and told me she heard on the news something about New Jersey.
Oh, yes.
And I didn't get a chance to hear it, and I figured I'd better go to the quickest source to find out the information. And
Carteret,
that would be you.
Carteret, New Jersey, July 17th, and people were pulling off the freeway to see this incredible display of lights in a V-type formation. There were people at the police department in Carteret. There were people pulling off the freeway. It just went on and on, seen by zillions of people. And that's it. I mean, it was a V-type formation of lights. And, you know, it hit a lot of people really hard. So there was a major sighting in New Jersey.
And there was video taken of it? I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Genuinely video taken?
Oh, yes.
I'm actually a member of MUFON, a field investigator here, and so it caught my interest right away, and I'd like to find out as much information as possible.
According to the Associated Press, nearby Newark Airport reported no unusual flight patterns. The National Weather Service meteorologist could find nothing in the weather to possibly explain the lights.
Oh. Very good. But video was taken, so that can be tracked down.
You know, of course.
Very
in
good.
Fact, they've got a kind of a picture that came from the video in the ABCnews.com story. So, if you want to pursue it, go to ABCnews.com, and you'll get more than you bargain for there.
Very good.
All right?
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello? Going once.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hello?
You're going to have to yell at me, sir. I can't hear you very well.
Okay, so. Hi. I'm Chris from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yes, sir.
Okay, no, what I was calling about is I heard your sighting in New Jersey.
Yes.
And it sounded funny because Saturday, which would be the 15th, because it'd be the 14th or 15th, at 1:30 we saw the same object go over us.
Well, now, how would you know it was the same object? You saw a similar object go over
you,
right?
Yeah, similar object. It was in a V-shape. Okay, here's the deal. We were out on the porch, me and my buddy and then my girlfriend, and we were sitting there, and I ran in to grab a pop. This is about in between 1 and 1:30-ish in the morning. So this would be Saturday morning.
Right.
And we're sitting out there, and I go out there, and I open up the front door, and I look straight up to my right, and I just caught a glimpse. And it was like they were in a V-shape at first, and I'm thinking ducks, because that's how ducks go. But these were like...
Well, geese do that, I think.
Right, right. And these were like reddish-orange lights.
Yes.
And they were shaped in a V, and then they had... It extended all the way back, I'm going to say maybe 12, 13 of them. And then on the right, there was one flying, kind of like a wingman would fly.
Yes.
Like in the military.
You're right.
And there was one on the right, and he was just flying solo, and then there was all these other ones next to it. Flying at the same speed, no sound, nothing.
Well, 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 well. We really seem to be in the middle of a flap, don't we?
Yeah.
How do you feel about what you saw?
Well, you know, I don't know, because I've never seen nothing in my old 27 years on Earth, and I seen that, and I don't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I have no clue. And like I said, I mean, I wish I could explain it to you better. I could draw it. But I really don't know what it was.
Well, welcome to the club.
So it was crazy.
I know. Once you've seen something like this, as my wife and I did on two occasions, you're changed. You know, it's going to change you in some profound way, because there are only two possibilities, as I've said many times. Either A, possibility A, our military has technology that is so far ahead of anything we would dream they would have, as in the ability to appear and disappear, as in the ability to defy gravity. That would be, of course, a pretty big story, wouldn't it, if our military had that technology, or B, we are being visited. Take your choice. Either way, a big story. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
This is Olin in Culver City, California.
Hello, Olin.
Hi there. I think your back was damaged while driving the motorhome that's built on a truck chassis.
No, it was fine. That thing rides like a dream. It rides on air, in fact. It was so comfortable, you can't believe it. I've got ergonomic seats in there. No. My back was damaged when I leaned over to put that damn thing in the sun. Crack.
Well, I can't believe that leaning over and setting something down would cause that.
Oh, believe it.
I would like to suggest that the next time you take a trip in the motorhome, I think you should wear one of those half-foot-wide back support belts to protect your back from further injury.
Well, again, I disagree with you. You've got to remember, I had been home a few days by the time this occurred. I mean, we were well into the Philippines situation. There were several days elapsed. So my back was just spiffy.
Were you carrying a bunch of heavy suitcases?
No. See, that's a beautiful thing about an RV. You don't have suitcases, sir. Everything you want is right there. In drawers, cabinets, storage areas, everything you want is right there. You don't have to carry anything.
I think something set you up for that accident. I think you were strained doing something during the trip. I don't know what.
Well, I appreciate your thought, but it should have occurred, if it was going to, prior to that. Certainly prior to that. No, this was... Listen, trust me when I tell you. I was on the phone, as a matter of fact. I was on the telephone when this happened. I walked out, you know, I'm on the phone all the time. It's like one's glued to me. And, in fact, I was on the phone with my boss, and I went out. I was talking to him about this or that regarding the network and going back on the air and everything. And I got out of the porch, leaned down, put the solar candle down in the sun, and he heard the crack on the phone. He could hear my back go on the telephone. That's how loud it was. You don't want to know. I mean, it was just absolutely awful. If you can imagine a kind of a... I can't even simulate it properly. It was actually a sharper sound. Something like that. It's going to make me hurt just to think about it. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Yes, good morning, sir. Where are you?
This is Richard calling from Naples, Florida.
And a first-time caller at that, I presume?
Yes, sir.
Okay, go right ahead.
I've enjoyed your program this morning, and this is kind of along the line of a phenomenon in the sky.
Yes.
Okay, that should be visible. I'm kind of bummed out. I was ready to set this up. There were, this is where the moon is in a triangle of stars in the eastern sky. And
I'm not following you.
Well, yesterday morning I noticed it. Venus, the morning star.
Yes.
And two other stars form a
triangle.
A very tight, almost a perfect isosceles triangle.
Yes.
And the moon comes right up and sits right inside the triangle. And if anybody can see it, it's rather striking.
Damn Masons.
Well, I don't know that it means anything, but in other words, I went ahead and brought the camera and the video, and now we're stocked in with cloud cover here. So.
Uh-huh. Oh, well, I don't know. It just may be.
If anybody looks toward the eastern sky at about 40 degrees above the horizon, and you find Venus and everything, and, hopefully you'll witness the same. It's worth a look.
I'll take a look. At about what time?
Well, now, that'd be, I noticed it at 4:45 Eastern Standard Time yesterday.
Okay.
And I don't know, in other words, where you are, out there in the high desert, it might be a couple, a couple hours later.
Well, there's not much of a moon up there right now, is there?
No, in other words, the moon is late to rise. That was the phenomenon.
Oh, it's late to rise, okay.
Yeah, in other words, that it comes up, it was like the sun is chasing it, but the, anyway, I just thought if somebody gets a photo, it's worth a photo.
All right. I appreciate the tip, and I'm sure a lot of people will go out this morning, in fact, shortly, really, and have that opportunity. It's what? Are you on the East Coast?
Yeah, I'm on
Florida. Well, that's right.
West,
you said
the
Florida.
West Coast of Florida.
West Coast. That's East Coast. All right. So that would be, it's just a few minutes before 5 o'clock there right now.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, well, we're socked in with cloud cover. I'm all set up to photograph it, and we're socked in with cloud cover.
We're not. It's clear out here, sir. So
keep your eyes to the sky, then.
I'll take a look.
Thank you much, Art.
All right, thank you, and take
Love
care.
Love the program.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to endeavor to do one more hour, as my back seems to be under some control at the moment, so we'll see what we can do here. Anything you've got, we're in open lines for the remainder of the show. Anything at all, absolute open lines. Anything can happen, talk radio. I'm Art Bell. From the high desert where it's clear and the moon may be moving through the triangle shortly. By the way, there are entire web pages devoted to me and the Masons. And I just can't figure out why they're doing that. Whole web pages devoted to Art Bell and the Masons. And they think I'm a Mason. Well, I might be. Good morning.
Wanna take a ride? This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
So what do you think? Can Russian satellites monitor what we think? That's what they're claiming. And Pravda, they're claiming they can actually read our minds from satellite. All right, Leonid, read this.
Yeah.
And your mother, too. All right. Back into the nighttime with all of you and open lines. Anything you want to talk about is absolutely fair game. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air. Good morning. Hello.
Hello. How's it going, Art?
It's going well. You've been listening, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Then you know.
Yeah, I know. But actually, I have a question on one of your previous broadcasts. You were discussing the Bigfoot there.
Oh, yes.
To do with, suppose, of the two bodies there. I was just wondering what was going on with that.
You're talking about Bugs, right?
Yes, yes.
What's going on is Bugs, after I gave him about, a week and a half, 2 weeks to think about it.
Yeah.
I called Bugs back, and he said his wife would not let him move forward.
Really?
Yeah. It's kind of a repeat of the last time Bugs was on. In other words, I think that he had good reason to be concerned about the possibility of being charged with murder. And you can imagine that when he had a chance to talk with his wife, I mean, that night he was ready to turn everything over.
Yeah, I remember that quite well.
And I think he just, his wife thought better of it for him, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I understand that. I think that we'll get to it eventually.
Yeah, that's something I'd really like to hear about, actually.
And if he gives me the word, even now, anytime, I will turn all of that over to Robert W. Morgan.
Yeah.
And away we go.
Right on, right on.
Okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, sir, and take care. Now, I understand that. And if you don't, think about it really hard, those of you who heard the show with Bugs. And imagine the next day and the following week talking the thing over with your wife and realizing that your entire life could be turned upside down. Wives sometimes have a different way of looking at things than guys. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art.
Hi there. Where are you?
This is Maria in San Francisco.
All right. Welcome.
I just relocated from Japan, and fighting the jet lag, I got addicted to your show, so I can't go back to normal sleeping hours.
So you were listening to the show in Japan?
No. As soon as I came to San Francisco, I just tuned in incidentally.
Okay. Well, glad to have you aboard.
Wonderful to have you back, and I'm just ecstatic that you're recovered, hopefully, and you'll be with us again. I have a few questions for you.
Sure.
All this, I'm all new to this paranormal and UFO and bugs with the hairy things. And I just want to know, how do you all keep it together and don't go mad? Because I'm just going, I'm just sleeping with flashlights around me and checking every corner when I'm turning a corner.
Yeah.
And how do you fight the fear that comes with all this?
Well, I don't know. Fear is a big controlling mechanism for human beings. And fear and anger both mask a careful and reasoned investigation. And so I guess you would do best by trying to control your fear and looking at these things straight on. You know, it's hard to give advice in this area. I know it's easy to say don't be fearful, and I'd be the first one, believe me, when the monster's banging in the basement, I don't go down there, you know? Not that I have a basement, yeah, mind you, but if I did, I wouldn't go down there like they do in the movies. So I'm the last person to really be preaching about this.
Well, it would be really interesting if you invite J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter, who is have written also a textbook on magical creatures and where to find them.
Love to have him.
And,
in fact, I'm thinking of doing a show on dragons. Dragons are big now.
It would be very interesting.
I've got
the other thing I wanted to ask you is, have you considered also having Daniel Quinn, the author of The Story of Bee and Ishmael and My Ishmael, a very interesting author who writes a lot about in line of what's going on in the show, the Antichrist, and the show that you did on the Bible Code, and what is all coming to? Where are we going as a planet?
All right. Well, here's the deal. If you will send me some contact information for the authors, people ask me all the time, we have this person on or that person. If you will assist me in some way, email me. You can email me at artbell@mindspring.com. That's my email address, artbell@mindspring.com or artbell@AOL.com. And do your best to provide some sort of contact information for the guests that you want. I will proceed from there and do what I can. I am open, as you well know, to anything under the sun or moon. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, that's me now, right?
That is you, sir.
Okay, thanks. Hi, Art. Hi, this is Len in Northwest Pennsylvania. I guess I was the guy that opened up the big old can of worms there on the Shadow People.
Oh, did you start that?
That was me.
Oh, my.
Well, there was a couple things I wanted to clear up.
All right.
Okay, well, I listened to the show that you had with Major Ed Dames there.
Yes.
And where he did the remote viewing on the Shadow People, where he called them, I believe it was shadows of
ghosts.
Ghosts.
Yes.
Well, some of the stuff he said made sense, and some I have questions of. You know, I don't want to discredit the guy because he's very, very.
By the way, since you brought up the subject of Ed Dames, they believe they found Amelia Earhart's plane.
Ooh.
It's been on CNN, and if I'm saying it correctly, I believe it is in exactly the area and above ground, just the way Ed Dames said it would be. We'll nail that down further, but my jaw dropped when I saw that on CNN.
Boy, that'd be interesting, yes.
Yep.
Okay, but there's a couple things that I'd like to clear up or clarify. What he explained was it doesn't make sense to me of being the ghost, where he said something about if you put the a light source between the shadow people and the light source, that's what causes the ghost image or whatever.
That's correct. He said virtually they are shadows, just like shadows that humans cast, only cast by ghosts.
Well, that's fine and dandy, but that does not explain eye contact. Now, see, you know, remember I told you I made eye contact.
Oh, I know. And you and then 7 zillion other people. So, no, you're right. Doesn't explain that.
So, you know, it's like I have questions about that.
And whatever you believe a ghost to be, if you make eye contact with it, or its shadow, if you will, and it does a recognition and splits, that's not really ghost-like, as I have had a ghost explain to me.
Right. Well, that what was going to be my next thing here was that these, what I have experienced, are very, very passive beings.
Mm-hmm.
When they are being recognized as being seen, oh, yeah, they hightail it out of Dodge.
That's right.
Okay. So they are non-aggressive. I've faxed you a couple times and emailed you a couple times, but, you know, whatever. But every of my personal experiences that these beings are non-aggressive. So when you get the people writing into you that they're attacking them, bouncing on their beds or whatever, and looming over them and saying boo in the middle of the night, these to me are not the shadow people that I know of.
Gotcha, sir. All right. Well, you may recall we had, in a subsequent program following your call, we did a program with a Native American, and we had people who did drawings of what they saw, and they were mighty impressive, and they are still up on the website. If you go to What's Older on the front page, they're still up there. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Bell.
Hi, where are you?
I'm in Memphis.
Memphis, Tennessee.
Yes, sir. Uh-huh. I've got a couple of things here, coincidentally, that I've held over from just before you went on vacation.
Okay.
And you may have already heard about these because they're both Associated Press things, but I don't know. Did you know that Navy is testing unmanned mini submarines out in San Diego?
Unmanned mini submarines.
And,
no, I didn't know that.
And they have already developed hovercraft that resembles the fictional 1950s vintage flying saucers. It says the flying craft gather intelligence while hovering quietly. Now, this was in the paper.
Really?
But now, the main thing that got me was your first guest tonight, when he came on the air,
yes,
was talking about this big flash, the birds getting fried up in Tennessee.
Yes.
Up in Hartsville.
Yes.
Well, I think we can safely say that Oak Ridge, Tennessee, could be deemed Area 52 now, because they have made the world's most powerful lamp up there, among other things. It says this one lamp could light the University of Tennessee's 104,000-seat football stadium with just two bulbs. It's a 300,000-watt radiant plasma lamp that can generate enough heat to bond and shape metal, delivering more than 3,000 degrees Celsius instantly and precisely.
Well, we live in interesting times.
I'm telling you. And Oak Ridge is really up there working night and day. And there's no telling. You know, the University of Tennessee, I found out about a month ago, the University of Tennessee itself has about 15 different multi-million-dollar contracts with the government, and they are also working out of Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
Well, I'm worried a lot about what science is doing. I think science is getting out ahead of our ability to ethically judge whether we should proceed with a lot of these things.
Yes, sir. And cloning is one that I'm really up against.
There's another
mentally.
One. Yeah, there's another one. Sure.
You know, and I don't know.
It all comes down to, should we push this button? And inevitably, science pushes the button.
Right. But I do believe that your other guest, Mr. Cullum, when he said that his thoughts were that they're gathering on these animal mutations, I think there's a certain amount of gathering on that myself because, you know, for a long spell there, we were really interested in the anthrax.
Oh, yes.
And how to come up with something to combat that. And
well, that's that's a positive possibility that they're trying to figure out how to combat certain things. But again, that you wouldn't think, if the government is involved, that they would need farmers' cows to do that experimentation on. Why risk that when you can get your own cows? I mean, our government can get their own cows, right?
If they did, though, they would probably have them in groups, whereas it seems to me like, from what I've read, that they're going after individual strays that aren't associated with large bunches.
Mm-hmm. The negative side of this is, if they're culturing, they could be culturing for negative reasons as easily as positive reasons.
Absolutely.
Something we should all bear in mind.
Thank you, sir.
I appreciate the call. Thank you, and take care. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning. Hello?
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Turn your radio off, please.
Okay.
That's the first thing anybody ought to do when they get on the air on this program. Hi there. Where are you?
I'm in Hawaii.
Hawaii. How are the islands this morning?
Pretty dark.
Pretty dark, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. What's up?
Am I talking to Art right now?
What do you think?
I don't know. It doesn't seem like it if the radio's on and he's talking.
Really? Do you still have your radio on?
No, I turned it off.
Oh, good. Yes, it's me.
Oh, it is. How does that work?
it's complicated, but it's the way it happens. There's a tape delay, you see, so.
I see. So I had a couple of questions
for
you.
Not actually a tape, it's digital. Yes. Go ahead.
There's so many questions, actually. I'm trying to narrow it down in my mind.
Okay.
Lenticular clouds, have you heard of those?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever had anybody call in and talk about those with you? Because we've had some experiences out here over Mauna Kea having a lenticular cloud that hung out for about 4 days.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would think there would be very strange meteorological conditions there, wouldn't you?
I really can't explain it. I mean, I know in the newspaper they had some scientific explanations for it, but as far as, like, just my personal experience with this lenticular cloud, I mean, at the time I was viewing it over days, I didn't know it was called a lenticular cloud, but it looked exactly the same shape as what you would think a UFO would look like, right?
Sure, sure. We get them out here, too.
You do?
Yep.
So do you have any input on those?
No, I think it's a meteorological condition that meteorologists are very familiar with. So it comes in high winds, particularly.
Mm-hmm.
We have them out here in high winds. They're very odd. They can look like gigantic UFOs, but I think they're clouds.
Okay.
Okay, we've got enough real UFOs running around. The islands, of course, are a very magical place.
Yeah, we definitely get a lot of strange things in the sky besides lenticular clouds.
Oh, yes, indeed. So, anything else?
Well, I had another experience. It's maybe too lengthy, but basically, when I was a younger child, looking out the window at night, and the whole sky above my house turning into white light. It wasn't like something flew over. It was like I'm looking out the window, and suddenly the whole sky is white light.
You mean like the sun came out at night?
It was almost more like a giant spotlight, you know, just like a giant white light. I mean, and it just wiped all thoughts out of my mind except, like, what am I seeing? And I was maybe about 11 or 12 when this happened, and, you know, my face is just pressed against the window pane, and it seemed to just, you know, I don't really have a concept of how long I was looking at it. It seemed like kind of a long time, but maybe it wasn't. I'm not sure. And it seemed to suddenly just zoom off towards the front of the house.
Although, so did you lose time?
I don't know, because, you know, I was forced to go to bed at a certain time, but I'm a night owl, so I could never go to sleep. So it's kind of hard to say how long I was looking at. That's, you know, I'm not really clear on that. I don't know if I lost time. But it's it seemed to me it went towards the front of the house, and I don't really know why it seemed like that. It just, that was what it seemed like, and I just found myself jumping out of bed, you know, not thinking about anything. Of course, I wasn't allowed to jump out of bed at that time. And I just ran to my parents' room because it seemed like it went towards the front of the house, and their door was shut. And, of course, I knew you don't go into your parents' room at night when they're in bed and the door is shut. So
no.
I just burst through the door, ran to their window thinking maybe it was at the front of the house now, and I didn't see anything. And I ran to the next window. I didn't see anything. And then I looked at them, and they were looking at me like, oh, my God, what has gotten into her? And I just started getting hysterical. Did you see that light? That light out the window. They both started talking at the same time. My mom's going, you're dreaming. You were asleep. It was a dream. Go back to sleep.
Well, do you think you might have been?
No, I don't.
No way, huh?
No way.
How old are you now?
I'm 30 years old now.
30?
Yeah.
Have you had children?
I have children.
Do you think they're yours?
Do I think they're mine?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Your children.
They came out as me.
Well, I know, but you could have been gone for a while in the light, you know?
Well, I never really quite thought about that.
Anything
that happened to other people?
The next time, I mean, you know, when you get up tomorrow morning, later this morning, take a good look at your children and be sure all the proper characteristics are there.
Seems like it.
Nothing a little alien.
No, I don't think so. I would have been a little too young. I mean, I hadn't even got my first period yet.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. All right, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Take care. From the islands. They are, you know, a magical place, the Hawaiian Islands. A lot of really strange things happen there. There are ghost stories connected to the Hawaiian Islands that are unlike any place in the world. It's just a strange kind of magical place. Let's break here. We'll be right back.
03.
You know, reading from the Carteret incident, Carteret, New Jersey, occurred on July 17th, this last weekend. One witness described it, the lights, that is, as a peaceful, easy feeling. It's really amazing, said Veronica Bagley, whose family captured the lights on video. While at home said, whatever it was, she was unafraid. I wasn't alarmed because it was peaceful, she said. Another witness took it a step further. Quote, very peaceful, very serene, very beautiful, she said. I think we witnessed some type of miracle. We do live in strange times, don't we? This is a program that documents all of that. It's called Coast to Coast AM, and we'll be right back. Want to remind everybody out there that I will monitor our international line very carefully, and it rings all the time. I just frequently am in the middle of another call, and I can't get to it. So wherever you are in the world, from Europe to South America to the Orient, if you want to get to us, go to my website, artbell.com, if you can get to it tonight. And we've got a list of codes up there that you can use to call us from anywhere in the world. Toll free, it's free. We pay for the call. And or just call the AT&T operator and try to get through to us on the international line, which is 800-893-0903. That's 800-893-0903. And I will try and get to you as soon as I can. West of the Rockies, rather, you're on the air. Hi.
How you doing, Art?
Okay, sir. How are you?
That's good. I hope your back's feeling well.
Thank you. Well, it's not, but I will survive.
This is Montana John in Spokane, Washington.
Displaced, I take it, to Spokane.
Okay. I hope you've gotten my email.
I don't know. People ask me that all the time, and
On the Sasquatch research project.
Oh, Sasquatch research project. No, I'm sorry. I've been a bit under the weather here. So
yes, I understand that. I quite sympathize with you. I myself are going under the knife this morning.
Oh,
here in about 6 hours on my neck.
Oh boy.
So I know what you're going through.
At any rate, what about the research project? Tell me.
I have in the middle of putting together a team of doing research on Sasquatch sightings.
Okay.
And I have half the team that I need. And what we're doing is we're not going out there and we're not going to sit out in the woods looking for Sasquatch. We're going to investigate past sightings and any reports. Now, I believe and understand, and I won't be able to go this weekend because of my surgery, but the rest of my people will be going to Montana, where northern central Montana, there was a sighting this past weekend by a couple.
What do you think you'd do if you ran into a Sasquatch?
You're
going to go and investigate recent sightings, there's always a possibility you're going to run face-to-face with
exactly,
one.
Exactly. You know, we're not out to kill it. Of course not. We're
so you wouldn't shoot at it?
Well, tranquilizer, yeah.
Huh. You know, you need a lot of tranquilizer for something that big. And if you were to miscalculate the amount of tranquilizer, then it seems to me the Sasquatch might look on you with disfavor, you know, if you didn't really nail it.
Yeah, I understand that.
And so more than your neck could be on the line.
Well, that's why I've got other teammates that are going out there. I'm just
expendable teammates, I take.
Exactly.
I've got it. All right. So, are you looking for volunteers or something, or what?
No. I have basically the team. I'm just waiting to talk with them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then all I can say is keep me informed, and if something happens, I will have you on the air and let you tell everybody.
And hopefully you read my email.
Yep.
That tells you a little bit more of what I'm doing.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
Take care, and good luck with the hunt. And make sure you've got enough of that tranquilizer. Because otherwise, well. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I would just like to say that when I first heard, I never called before.
Never?
No.
That's why we have a first time caller line.
Yeah. And
where are you?
In California.
Okay.
And when I heard what happened to you, I actually started crying. And I said a prayer for you.
Thank you.
Because I have been going through the most heinous thing, not as similar to what you went through, but my family has done to me for 7 years now, and not even a pastor will talk to me.
Not even a pastor will talk to you?
No, no.
Oh, it must be really awful.
I don't know what they're saying. I don't know. It was done. I found out, you know, a few years later.
Wait. What was done?
To completely destroy me. And I've been made to look just like a paranoid fool. And I have no idea what, you know, all is being said about me. I've lost every friend. I'm 64 years old. I'm disabled. They have tampered with absolutely every single aspect of my life.
Well, it does. I'll say this. It does seem like sometimes that the black cloud descends, and it just rains and rains and rains and rains.
No. This was to cut me out of my parents' estate, my late parents' estate.
Well, that's a kind of a black cloud, hon. That's a kind of a black cloud where things just start going wrong. Everything goes wrong. And it's been said that there may be curses placed on people. Now, I'll tell you, I had somebody who's been on the show previously, who I will not name, who said, and I can't remember, my wife probably remembers, there were X number of curses put on me and all kinds of stuff that they claim they cleared. Curses and, what was it? Bunch of other stuff, negative stuff, you know, that they supposedly found that was attached to me. And so maybe these things happen. I don't rule it out at all. Not doing this kind of program. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art.
Yes, sir.
Glad to hear you. This is Tom, your buddy Trucker Tom from Oregon.
Hey, Tom.
Congratulations on your recent vacation. Glad to hear you're better.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, hey, I asked the last time I came on with you, what was going on with your radio station? When are you going to have that up?
Oh, you know, I'm so glad you asked. We received the construction permit, which means you can start building from the Federal Communications Commission. However, we applied for a simple little tower height modification And it's like it got lost in the Federal Communications Commission labyrinth of bureaucracy. And it's there somewhere, but and some, you know, bureaucrat has had it sitting on his desk, probably constantly going to the bottom of the inbox is the way I mentally picture it.
Yeah.
We're just waiting
for
this.
Yeah, you're not a conglomerate, so it doesn't matter.
I know. We're waiting for this minor little modification, and I'm sure we'll have it shortly, he says.
Oh, that's sweet. You know, that fellow was just on about the Sasquatch and taking a away team up to Montana to check it out. I wish, my feeling on the whole thing is I just like to see them leave the animals alone if they... they are animals if they ain't feral humans or something like that.
I don't think so. With the descriptions we've had and the hair and the cross between a kind of early man and animal.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like a feral human, does it?
No, it doesn't, but, you know, I think there's a spark of intelligence there, and if we could just kind of let them be, they might approach us in a neighborly fashion.
Well, they might.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I'll be interested to see how he does. Now it's a kind expedition he's going to be on. He says he's not going to shoot at any of them, other than with.
No, he's taking a tranquilizer gun. That was what got me. I'm going, oh my God, he's going to break up a family unit and take this thing off to Princeton or someplace and wind up studying it and
just miscalculate a little bit on the amount of tranquilizer and it could go the other way.
At the end of that, you'll have a family of them down on him.
That's right. All
nice
right,
talking
sir.
To you, Art.
Good talking to you. Take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. All right.
Hi, extinguish
so
your
glad.
Radio. Turn
yeah,
it off.
I'm so glad I'm listening on a little San Jean TV 200.
Oh, DTV 200. Boy, that's some radio, isn't it?
It is great. It is great.
An
it is
amazing
small,
radio.
It's delightful. It gets me all the stations.
And where are you?
I'm in New York.
New York.
And you're
okay.
Not on here now, but
right.
I found a way to get you via the San Jean radio.
Which station do you manage to snag?
1210 in Philadelphia.
Oh, the monster from Philly, yes.
It's wonderful. I'd like to suggest that you see Dr. Eric Scott Pearl if you haven't already.
Magic hands, huh?
Excuse me?
Magic hands, huh?
Yeah, I hope that they work for you. I can't think of anything else, but, you know, this is my suggestion.
Well, somebody in my condition will consider anything, and if hands can heal, baby, lay them on.
I hope he does. also, this lady who called us from Hawaii, who, you know, she leaves her lights on because she's so scared. Well, I kind of get scared when I listen to your program, too, but I'm happy it's on because forewarned is forearmed. In other words, I know what's coming, so I can defend against it as much as I can. At least I know what's happening.
Well, so, if the aliens are closing in on New Jersey, Philadelphia can't be far down the line.
And New York is next.
That's right.
But at least I know it, you know, so I won't be that, you know, terrified. If you know where the quicksand is, hopefully you won't step in it.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And so we're an early warning system.
That's right. So the lady shouldn't be too afraid. When you mentioned about the Russians...
Yes.
You know, with this... well, I know that if you put aluminum foil in a letter, that nobody can read into it. So perhaps people might put aluminum foil around their hats, maybe cover something up so the aluminum, you know...
So that the satellites can't read your mind?
Yeah. I hope so.
You know, this is the stuff of... paranoid fairy tales that satellites can read your mind, and yet here it is in print from Pravda where the Russians are actually claiming satellites can read our minds.
Yeah, I don't put anything past anything. I'm not surprised by anything anymore.
And I doubt a little Alcoa is going to stop them.
Well, it stops the letters.
Yeah,
so it's the only thing I can think of, you know. If I think of something else, I'll try to call and tell.
I know, but it seems so antisocial. Now, if you could put it in a coating, if you were, like, wearing a hat or a cap or something,
yeah.
Put it in a coating, have another cap over that so nobody can see the foil. Because when they see the foil right away, you know...
Oh, yeah, I was saying, put it underneath your hat.
Oh, I see.
so nobody can tell it's there, of course. You don't want to become, you know, check on this guy. He's got the foil. But if you put it underneath your hat, nobody's going to tell. Then again...
Well, if the Russians have nothing better to do than to read my mind from satellite, then they must be really bored.
Well, if the Russians do it, the United States government might be next. You never know.
Oh, listen, you cannot have a mind reading from satellite gap. So,
right.
So if they're doing it, you know we're doing it. Or maybe we were even doing it first, now they're doing it.
Of course.
And probably by now the Chinese are doing it.
It's possible.
But they could never figure out the way Americans think anyway.
Yeah, but I would advise people to put cloth between themselves and the aluminum foil, because aluminum might be bad for your, you know, for your head also. So one layer of cloth, one layer of aluminum, then the hat.
All right, dear, thank you. And you know, normally something like that is so outrageous that you just laugh. Except for the Pravda report here. An amazing report. Straight from Pravda. Check it out yourself. And they, the person who wrote this ends by citing a true Roman proverb, time reveals all things. Don't believe me? Time reveals all things. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing.
You're doing.
I'm doing.
Hey, greetings from a fellow radio personality.
Really?
Yeah, I work for actually competition to who you're on out here.
What?
Well,
wait a minute. Where's out here?
Flagstaff, Arizona.
Flagstaff, all right.
Yeah. No, you said high desert. Where are you?
Pahrump, Nevada, which is about 2650. You're probably higher than that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we're on 7,000 feet.
Oh, that's high desert.
Yeah, well, I grew up in New York and moved here about almost 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And this high desert thing was a new concept.
Well, it's a wonderful place.
Well, we get snow here. I moved from New York to get away from the snow. Guess what I got?
Snow.
Yeah. But actually, I was calling about, you know, you mentioned the Russians reading your mind from a satellite.
Yes.
You know, I when I was working for a station back east in New York and Vermont, they the AP wire had this really great story regarding Y2K in Russia.
Uh-huh.
And the story was how they were buying old Macintoshes off the black market to Y2K-proof their nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, come on. Logically, if these people are buying old Macs that probably were used in some college somewhere for their nuclear weapons to Y2K-proof them, you know what I mean?
Well, the Russians also claim the ability to create cyclones...
Right.
By satellite, from satellite, in order to put out fires in Southeast Asia. They actually offered to create a cyclone for free the first time to put out fires, and then they would charge for it after that. And now they're claiming they can read minds from satellites.
Yeah, you know, you got to say, you know how we have the home shopping network here?
Yes.
In Russia, they have a home potato network. No joke. It's all potatoes and potato accessories 24/7.
You're
come on, the country that's got that mentality, you know.
So you don't believe a word of it?
Not really, you know. I mean, I'm not like this all-American, yeah, we're the smartest, because, you know, we're not the smartest, but, you know, I highly doubt that's possible yet. Give us more time, you know.
Again, if it is, then you know we've got it too, or even had it first.
Yeah.
So you got to wonder how much ahead, farther ahead we are.
Yeah, you know, if they can read a brain,
yes,
then I wish they'd read mine and tell me exactly what's going on up there, because, man...
you're confused personally, huh?
I'm confused. I don't know. Yeah, you know, I have to keep a little name tag with me. I get lost.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, I work for this station over here. Bring it back, leave me in the prize closet, you know.
What do you do for that station?
Well, right now I'm doing production and a couple other just helping out jobs. I was voice tracking overnights, but I had a fight with the boss, so... This guy's got two teeth and thinks things that worked 20 years ago in radio will still work, and they don't, and the ratings are 0.9, and I opened my mouth to him, so...
Did you hear about Rush Limbaugh's new contract?
No.
Something like, I can't remember, $248 million. Some incredible figure. So, there you are. Stay in the business.
Oh, I will. I love it. I absolutely love the radio business.
And you never know.
You know, I want to own my own station someday, you know?
Someday you could own your own chain of stations.
No, I don't like the big change. You know, I like one little station.
One little station.
One little station, yeah.
All
then
right.
I'd be happy.
Well, that's the way it begins, my friend.
Yeah, true.
One little station.
You know, I just want to dive the station on my books.
All right, thanks.
Hey, thanks a lot. Have a great night.
Yeah, you too.
You got a great show.
Thank you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, hi.
Hi. Where are you?
I am in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Okay.
My name is Chris.
Yes, Chris.
Okay, how you doing? Yeah, it was about 1997. I was going to see my dad out in Chicago, and I was going through Byron, Illinois on Route 64.
Yes.
And it's near Rockford over there, and I was looking out the window on the passenger side, you know how you're tired, and looking straight up in the sky, and I saw a silver disc up there,
mm-hmm.
and I told my mom to pull over, and she started getting scared because the thing was moving side to side.
Yes.
Really, really fast, though. And then it would close in on itself and, like, reappear, I don't know, maybe a couple thousand feet. But it would turn kind of black right when it would close in itself and when it reappear.
I'm not sure what you mean by close in on itself.
It would just disappear, but it would, like, close up. I don't know how you explain it. Like, the sides would go in the center, but and then it would completely disappear.
Okay.
It's like if it went into the clouds or something, but it just, you know, midair.
Right. Disappearing and appearing. I've got that.
Yeah, but it would reappear.
So anyway, we're almost out of time here. So
okay.
The car stopped?
Yeah, and I was... That was the first UFO I ever saw, so... But it would, like, reappear, like, a couple thousand feet, like, on the left-hand side or the right-hand side. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. And so that was it?
Yeah.
Well, as I said, everybody, welcome to the club. Listen, I've got to go.
Okay, real quick.
Tell everybody good night.
Okay, thanks a lot.
No, wait.
Okay.
Tell everybody good night.
Okay.
Say good night.
Good night, bud.